Unified School District, Board of Trustees. The board met in closed session and we discussed our public employee performance evaluation with the superintendent. We also met an open session on that item. The board also met for a conference with our labor negotiators regarding our negotiations with the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Do we have a consensus on the order of business? Okay, seeing yes. Let's go ahead and look at approval of the minutes, please. So we have, I believe, a couple of sets of minutes. The first set of minutes was for May 10th. Do I hear a motion on that? As amended, by the way, there are some changes here that were placed at our desks. It's been moved by Mr. Buckman. Do we have a second? Seconded by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion?
Mr. Kratzer from the audience thinks that it's not entirely accurate that Ms. Stoneman dissented, so I'm not quite sure on public comments. I apologize. I'm not on the right page.
Page 3.
Middle of page 3. Thank you. I'm not quite sure if anybody has a different recollection.
Yeah.
Is Ms. Stoneman here to recount that? At public comment, is that a possibility?
Yeah, I'm not sure that she dissented. I would say that Mrs. Blakely dissented and took us all to task, actually. Is there somebody that would like to address the matter of whether Mrs. Stoneman dissented or not? Okay, I'm not seeing anybody that would like to talk about that. My recollection as well is that Mrs. Stoneman did
contract negotiations in a timely manner. I would like you to direct your representatives to return to the table, which I think would lead us to that goal. This idea of keep moving on later and later, that was the thrust of my comments, that we don't need to do that. If you could direct them to return, it's frustrating to be your employee. It's frustrating to hear you say that it could be resolved and then not have an opportunity to resolve it, and yet watch in the current agenda this evening that we can spend money, $6 million, for upcoming initiatives, but we can't settle this contract because we're not quite sure where the state budget will go. So anyway, rather than making public comment, I'd just like to address that I don't believe those minutes reflect what I was intending to say, and I think if we go back and looked at it, that wasn't what I was saying, that my main thrust is not that I want a COLA. I'd like to resolve the issue.
Okay.
Thank you for your time. Appreciate it.
So, Phil, you made the motion. Is that correct?
I had the discussion. I don't believe.
Okay. Who made the motion? Mark, you made the motion. So, would you go with an amendment, say, to clarify what Mr. Buck Moyer said, and perhaps strike what Mrs. Stoneman said? Okay. Would that be acceptable to you, Mr. Quisenberry, as well? Okay. So currently we have a motion and a second for the minutes with some changes in it which would reflect what Mr. Buck Moyer clarified this evening, and then also that Mrs. Stoneman dissented. Is that okay? So I'm seeing that as a consensus from the board. So that would be the motion then, I believe. Okay. Is there any more discussion on the minutes? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and take a vote on that. All in favor of approval of the minutes as amended? Aye. Opposed? Okay. It carries.
I was not present.
Okay. We have 5 ayes, 1 abstention. Motion carries. Let's move on to, and I need to apologize, but I had a problem with my board book, and so I took my notes on my computer, and that's why it's here, so I apologize for having it here and kind of going through things. I don't see that we have any student representatives this evening, so we'll bypass that. Let's move on then to our presentation, which is Employees of the Year. Mr. Robinette.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, every year we get to acknowledge our Employees of the Years for various different categories, and we have 4 of them here to recognize tonight. Actually, I believe it looks as if one of our individuals isn't here. I've been scanning the room, and Morro Bay High School has a conflict tonight, and that may explain part of it. But I do want to have the supervisors of these individuals come up and tell you a few words about them, because this is really a wonderful group of employees. So first of all, for our physical support employee of the year, I'd like to invite Sue Thorson to come up and say a few words.
Batch by Rosalie, who scooped all the dough and pressed all the cookies. And so in her time, she's probably made thousands and thousands of cookies for us. Today, she spends far more time baking whole grain quick breads for our elementary schools. She also bakes off rolls for some of our specialty sandwiches. She makes coffee cakes, cinnamon rolls, and she still makes cookies, but these are the low-fat, low-sugar variety. As the food service program has evolved and changed over the years, Rosalie has always been up to the challenges that we've presented to her, never complaining, always making it work for us. When she's finished with her own work, she tends to be a team player and looks around to see what else she can do to help out and to help her coworkers. Rosalie is a native of San Luis Obispo County. She's a product of our school system. She went to Morro Elementary, San Luis Obispo Junior High School, and she graduated from San Luis Obispo High School. She's married to Robert Canet, whose family has lived in the area since the 1800s. She's married, and together they have raised 6 children, and they now enjoy more than 50 grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Rosalie worked at the Madonna Inn restaurant before coming to work for us in 1986, and she was promoted to baker in 1993, so she's been baking for us for 18 years. It's really a pleasure to work with Rosalie. I'm so happy that she received this honor.
We have all benefited by Rosalie. And for our reception tonight, you should know, Rosalie baked cookies for us. To introduce our Administrator of the Year, I'd like to have Jeff Guy make that introduction.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here to represent Denise Gillo. Can she stand up here?
Sure.
Torture her just a little more. I mean, it's my job. Yeah, right here would be great.
I got your back.
Initially, I would just like to share some data to help us illustrate the breadth of what she covers in her department. 1,700 students are transported daily, over 300,000 students per year. 1,600 field trips coordinated yearly, an average of 8 per day during the school year. Over 2,000 home-to-school miles driven daily. In a year, that's 405,000 miles, including district-driven trips. So if you think about it, that's 300,000 students around our planet 14 times. Any volunteers? Yeah, is that a trip you'd like to go on? Not to mention our... Pardon me? Ah, there you go. Good man. Not to mention the regular fleet of vehicles to correct. It's remarkable. It says a lot about everything that goes on in her department. Denise continually searches for the most cost-effective solutions to save the district dollars every way she can, from field trips to vehicle pricing, finding grants, or catching errors in billing. Denise is the first one to say that the high level of dedication and skills of all of her employees is the number one reason for the success and quality and services for the district and the community. And above all, she's really just a delightful person to work with every day. 15 years. Very nice.
I'd just like to say thank you for the honor, and none of this would be possible without my boisterous, shy group of staff here, and if it wasn't for them, it wouldn't matter. So this is, I've worked at a lot of districts in my career, and this is as good as it gets. So there they are. Thank you.
We even have some retirees coming out of the woodwork for this occasion. For to recognize our school support employee of the year, I'd like to invite our director of information services and technology, Amelia Samos.
Well, it's my delight and pleasure to tell you a little bit about Don Orr. Don has been in the department for almost 10 years. And I've been there for 7, so it's really been a joy to work with him. He's one of the most skilled and hardworking employees that I've ever had the pleasure of supervising. He's been a network specialist with our district and supports is one of a team of 3 network specialists that support about 2,700 computers in all of our schools. Personnel Services refers to Don as their secret weapon. Whenever they're experiencing technical issues, Don is highly skilled and thrives on solving unique problems. He's extremely patient. And when you get an email response detailing what happened and what was wrong, you will come away knowing a lot more about the issue and being very well educated in the technology problem. This is when his passion really shines. Don is a team player, always working to diagnose and resolve issues, even when it means staying late or working weekends. In fact, he spent the last 2 days at Los Osos solving a network issue there. So he prides himself in doing a great job, and I feel that he really deserves this recognition, and I appreciate the fact that he will be getting that recognition tonight for the tremendous work that he does for us district-wide. So with that, I'll invite Don up here.
At Morrow Elementary, I actually see some old Morrow L people here. I should say old, former Morrow L people here in the audience. And then she's been the last 12 years at Morrow Bay High School. She is the school secretary. She is an incredible person. Everything Cindy does, I can tell you from my experiences, with grace and with a smile. And she's a wonderful employee. And so maybe we'll get her here next time to just recognize her. But so please give your applause to Cindy Varney, our clerical support employee. Here. With that, we want to have a quick little reception so we can take some pictures of these people for the press and enjoy some of Rosalie's cookies. And okay. We'll be back.
We'll take a 10-minute recess, and I'm going to stick to a 10-minute recess because we do have quite a bit of other business to attend to, and we have a number of people that would like to address the board during public comment.
Thank you.
So there are cookies in the back.
mostly.
It's my wife's email. Katie has a crush on her. So she wanted to talk and have a crush on her. Why did you do this? Mostly my grandma, but she was my daughter.
It was pretty serious. And your talk was pressed in. And she started dancing.
Oh, yeah.
She's just getting it out.
Okay, thank you very much. So the next thing we have is correspondence. And let me get to where I need to be here. Sorry. The board did receive two letters, one dated May 10th, 2011, from Nathaniel and Stacy White, urging the board to reduce the percentage of district funds allocated to reserves to the 3% requirement and to commit the other 7% currently allocated to reserves to classroom support. We also received a letter from on May 18th, 2011, from Rich Leatherwood, a client, Rennie Miner, and I believe all of these are supporting the Adults with Disabilities program. And we thank you very much for corresponding with the board. Okay. Then let's move on to public comment. The board has about 10 requests to speak tonight. And so, as I did the last time, last meeting, if you were here, I'm just going to remind people that the maximum amount of time we want to spend is about 20 minutes. At 20 minutes, I'm going to go back to the board and ask the board if they would like to continue with the public comment. We would ask that you keep all of your comments to 3 minutes. And if you want to repeat what somebody has already said, of course, feel free to come on up, but we would just ask you to say perhaps that you agree with what the other person says. Another thing you can do, too, to show your support is raise your hand to show your support for what a speaker is saying, and that's helpful for the board to see that as well. And the last thing is, if you would prefer, you can always write a comment to us, and Mrs. Holmes can direct you to where those are. The board will read every written comment that we get, and we take those all very seriously. And then the final thing is that the board can't and won't respond individually to public comments. So just know that we are listening very closely to what you say, but we won't be responding individually to them. Okay? So Mr. Angel is going to call two names. The first person is the person that will be speaking, and then I'll call essentially the person that's up the bat. So please be ready when your name is called so that we can get you up here and we can hear what you have to say. Are we ready, Mr. Angel?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So we'll start with Jody Barker, and following Jody Barker will be Peggy Kane.
I think I've already got one, sir. Thank you.
I can hear.
My name, as you have just found out, is Jody Barker. I'm president of People First San Luis Obispo, a self-advocacy organization run by people and for people with developmentally disabilities. This is my friend, Billy Baxmeyer, an adult ed teacher and advisor to People First of San Luis Obispo. People First of Slow empowers adults with developmental disabilities to write statewide law like AB 18, the Signature Step Act, and to educate First of Slow by providing positive, knowledgeable advisors and educate, assist, transport, coach, encourage, laugh, and cry with us. People First Advocacy, People First of Slow has People First of Slow has got to have people who know advocacy. You just can't have someone support us without the knowledge and background of the spirit of self-advocacy and the philosophy that we are all people first. I personally find that I respond to some teachers better than others. Our adult school educators provide the empathy and rapport that is necessary for all of us to get the best ongoing education in our adult lives. They have taught me how to deal with all kinds of people with equality, truth, and humor.
Sir, could you begin to wrap up? And if you'd like, please, we'd love to see a copy of that statement. If you could give that to Mrs. Holmes.
I believe you already have been given it, sir.
If I may, you all have a copy of this speech with the People First of Slow brochure and the DVDs.
Okay. Thank you. If you could wrap up, please.
Okay. Would you like?
Okay. I will make it as quick as I can. This strong support has always demonstrated to our group, People First of Slow, that we must advocate for ourselves and others and fight for justice and that which is right. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
So Peggy Kane followed by Maureen McGee.
Dear school board members, I have always liked Rosemary Flamian because she used to be my supervisor right in the nursery, right at Achievement House Base, but now she works right at Leap 2, and nobody wishes to lose her, and I do not wish to lose her at all either. I am thankful that Rosemary Flamian has helped me to learn a whole lot more about flowers and plants. I like Gay Donovan. She is my supervisor at Mailing and Moore, and she helps me to become a better person.
Thank you very much, Ms. Kane.
Maureen McGee, followed by Carrie Cerrone.
Hi, I'm Maureen McGee, and I'm here tonight speaking in support of the district's Adults with Disabilities program. And I didn't expect this. Peggy's my sister. She was born mentally retarded, and my parents were advised to put her in an institution. Thankfully, they disregarded this advice, and they raised her at home with her six younger siblings, of which I was one. It wasn't easy. Peg preferred to be alone, had sustained periods of odd solitary play, insisted on sameness, was very resistant to changes in routine, prone to tantrums and self-injury. My parents did their best. They sought advice from professionals, but there wasn't much available in the early 1960s, and no one had heard the word autism. They sent her to the local public schools. There wasn't a school psychologist, a speech or language specialist, behavior specialist, program specialist. I often wonder what Peg's life and my family's life would have been like had we had the resources that exist for families today raising a child with a developmental disorder. Today, Peg lives in a local community. Is this on? In a wonderful group home where she's so loved. Monday through Friday, she goes to work at Mailings and More, and here she receives skills and training and the support that she needs to help her be a productive, happy member of society. Through her years at this job, I have seen the support staff come and go, but the one constant has been her adults with disabilities teachers. These are specialized, credentialed teachers with the motivation and the desire to dedicate their careers to students like Peg. My sister finally has the support that she needed so long ago. And like most of her classmates, Peg's parents are not here to see that or to speak out on her behalf. But I'm here, and I want my sister and her fellow adult learners with disabilities to keep these credentialed teachers in their lives. Without a specialized credentialed teacher to be there day to day to guide and teach, these historically marginalized individuals will suffer, and subsequently will our community. Please do not underestimate the impact that these teachers have on the lives of the students, their families, and the community. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much.
Carrie Cerrone, followed by Gay Donovan.
Hello, everyone. I'm Carrie Cerrone, and I have been an adult education teacher with the district for 26 years. The Adults with Disabilities program of the San Luis Coastal Adult School originated in the mid-60s with one small adult basic education class housed in Achievement House in San Luis. Today, we have expanded into 8 programs based in 3 local host education, literacy advancement, self-advocacy training, community awareness, job skills preparation, vocational education, computer training, and adaptive technology training. Our educational mission is simply to give our students the skills and information that will allow them to maximize their potential for independence, living as valued and contributing members of our community. As a program, we have delivered 45 consecutive years of instruction to our students, a historically marginalized and frequently underserved group. Without the support provided by the school district, these students would lose access to formal education, an asset that allows them to move toward, and in many cases achieve, self-sufficiency, employment, and regular lives in our community. The vision and generosity of the district have provided the education and training that results in inclusion, acceptance, and a richer, more diverse community for us all. Thank you.
Thank you, and I do want to acknowledge the people that are raising their hand. It helps us get a feeling for who's observing this and what you're saying. Thank you.
So it's Gay Donovan, followed by Krotzer.
Good evening. My name is Gay Donovan. For over 25 years, I have worked as a teacher for the Adults with Disabilities program. For 20 years, my work site has been with the same Department of Achievement House, which is called Mailing and More. Dear Dr. Prater and school board members, I am writing and speaking to you today about the valuable work that is taking place in our Adults with Disabilities program and my concern about our students' future if we are not there. Our small group of credentialed teachers was formerly 8 teachers at 32 hours a week, plus subs and part-time teachers, and we will soon be 6 teachers at 32 hours weekly, no subs, and 1 teacher at 1.5 days. We feel that we're the heart and the backbone of our work sites at Achievement House, Pathpoint, and Casa de Vida. Let me give you an example of what I do. For over 10 years, I work with a young woman who had started at Mailing and More following her completion of high school here in San Luis Obispo. I helped her increase her self-confidence, counseled her and her friends at work in ways that they could get along better with less hurt feelings, and made sure that she learned the clerical skills she needed at Mailing and More until they were honed to perfection. After about 10 years, she felt ready to move on. She currently works on a supported employment crew for Achievement House. In the future, she could have her own job in the community with a job coach to assist her in getting started. Her family has thanked me many times. I know that my fellow teachers have their own success stories to share as we all plan and work with each individual student to achieve his or her fullest potential. Since most of us have 20 to more than 30 years of experience, we are role models and essentially teachers for our other host agency staff at our work sites. The host agency staff who are paid entry-level wages are required to have a high school diploma, and no previous experience in the field is required. At Achievement House, there is frequent turnover. One position at Mailing and More has turned over 4 times in less than 1.5 years. The constant presence of a teacher provides our students with much-needed stability. I urge you to consider continuing our program a priority. This has been a successful partnership between San Luis Coastal and our host agencies for over 40 years. In addition, our program provides continuity to the support provided by the district to our students in the past during their K-12 years. Our students, their families, our host agencies, our future students, and the possibilities of a more diverse community are dependent on your decision to stand up in favor of the continued education of a highly valued group of lifelong learners, our students. Thank you so much for your time.
Great. Thank you very much.
Ms. Krotzer, followed by David Sims.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shush Krotzer. And the wealth and humanity of our community, or any community, can be seen in how it treats the people who need help in its community. And I think that's a really important thing that we often forget. By cutting the funds for the teachers for the disability program, we're basically saying we don't care about these people because these funds change their lives. It's not just a little something they can do on the side. This is their livelihood, their quality of life. It's extremely important. I have an autistic brother who's 55 years old. He's classically autistic. He's nonverbal, and he is fortunate in a way that he doesn't live in this state of California. He lives in Connecticut, where the people there seemed to show a lot of respect and provide ongoing education and support for him. He works in a sheltered situation, and he has tutoring 4 nights a week still, and he has a wonderful quality of life. He's a happy, productive person as a result of the education that he's been given on a continuing basis. Please do not show the community and these disabled adults who rely solely on the education and assistance from this program that you just don't care enough. I'd be sort of ashamed to live in a district that has $25 to $30 million in reserves that says we need to cancel a program like this for these people. These are members of our community. Many of them, like my brother, are unable to speak for themselves, so we have to speak up for them, and I hope you all will do the same. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
David Sims.
My name is David Sims. It took me by surprise. I'm from Long Beach, California, and I'm a graduate of Long Beach Poly High School. And from there, I went to Arkansas Tech University. After I finished playing football, I started working with people with disabilities. I started out in Arkansas at a place called Friendship, helped with people who just, you know, needed to be more accessible to the community, trying to integrate with the community more. And from there, I worked in a facility in Texas, a neurological facility that helped kind of along the same lines. And from there, you know, I just enjoyed working with people with disabilities. Sorry, I'm kind of nervous, but I just want to speak plainly. But never have I been anywhere like San Luis Obispo, where of the of the adult with disabilities teachers. They spoke about the turnover that we have in different facilities, and that is so true. But as you can, as they spoke earlier about the decades of service that they have provided as to that backbone, like they have mentioned, that really is a key to the care. And I have learned so much. I do have a bachelor's degree, and still I am working at that facility, and that is due part because I'm learning so much about agenda making and planning and being on committees and, you know, just me being here today. So that is totally due to the people, the adult ed instructors that we have, like Carol Lopez and Billy Baxmeyer and those others that are here. I would feel it would be a dramatic drop in the quality of service that we provide our people with disabilities to let our adult instructors let them go. So, with that being said, that's it.
Great. Well, thank you very much. And I want to tell you that your son should be proud of you for standing up here and talking. You got a great kid, by the way. We do have a written comment from Brian Miller as well. So thank you very much. We want to acknowledge that. Did you want to speak?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I filled out the wrong form.
Well, come on down, Brian.
I'm pink. I guess pink.
Brian Miller, San Luis Obispo High School. I want to tell you a story about a student, former student I met this Saturday because I was downtown. His name is Greg Elmore. Greg was my student after he had been in a horrific accident when he was a junior in high school. He was turning left out of McDonald's and got broadsided by a car, and Greg's whole life changed instantly. Greg came to us and entered our program and became a student with us, and I went my way and went up to the high school. And I got caught up with Greg a little bit. And what I know about Greg is that Greg voted. Greg got married. Greg lives independently. This is a man with a body that is mangled, and that's a harsh term, but that's also a fairly accurate term. His intelligence is intact, but his body won't let him do certain things. Greg's attended Cuesta College, and as far as I know, he's been living independently for the last 15 or 20 years or so. All of this is possible for Greg Elmore because of the program that he went through via Friendship School and the programs that he advanced to subsequent to Friendship School. That is Greg, and that is his life, and he is one of many, and there are others in the audience that I'm sure have similar stories and similar circumstances. I will tell you this. Greg Elmore, as a student in this district, is just as important as the valedictorian at our high school, whoever that is this year. Now, the second tragedy about cutting this program will be the six teachers that we're going to lose that will one day face unemployment. These teachers as well are as important in what they know and surrounding areas. And if we want to maintain our distinctness above the other school districts, then it's programs like this that we keep, even at a cost that may mean we sacrifice somewhere else. It's those six employees that we keep, even if it means it costs somewhere else. Because the first thing we serve in this district, and you all know this, I'm preaching to the choir, we serve people and we serve our students. And these are people and our students, and they deserve just as much service as any other child in this district or any other student in this district. So given all of that, I think if you don't keep them, then you can't also keep the distinction of a school district that is also above the others in serving all of the people of this community in any way they can. We have that distinction. Let's keep that distinction. I think, in the words of Dr. Laura Schlesinger, God bless her career, she would say this, now go do the right thing. Thank you.
And I want to thank you, Mr. Miller. And I'd also like to acknowledge you as being someone who shared your life story on through the SELPA and was recognized by National Public Radio, I believe. And so thank you very much. Is there anyone else who would like to address the board in public comment? Okay, Mr. Bedrigan.
Bruce Bedrigan, President, San Luis Coach Teachers Association. I'll save a lot of time because I think Brian eloquently summed up what a lot of us feel is really the essential thing. It comes down to the whole idea that many of the teachers in this district stayed in this district because we felt that this was the best district on the Central Coast. We wanted to work here. We have an opportunity that other districts don't. We can afford to carry this program forward because we have the money to do so. And by doing that, we will save our community and our county a burden that otherwise they will have to pay when some of these individuals become institutionalized. So what we're doing by keeping these students and having teachers that help them learn to be independent and become productive citizens in our society, we are truly doing the right thing. And it costs us, but it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And again, we want to thank everybody for coming and speaking to us in public comment. We'll move on to the superintendent's updates. Dr. Prater.
Hello. Good evening. I'm here tonight. I do not appointed by the Board of Education here in San Luis Obispo 2 terms, and we're asking for her reelection tonight as a 3rd term. She's not here tonight, but we want to thank her for her pay it forward, so to speak, as she's always at the monthly CAC meetings, and she's helping to support students with disabilities as well as advocating and supporting parents in the community. Thank you.
And I believe that will come up this later, item number 14 under our action consent agenda.
Ready for the next item? Okay. Our wellness committee, our district wellness committee, is made up of representatives from all of our school sites. Sometimes they're parents, sometimes they're teachers or administrators. And part of our charge, besides meeting 4 times a year, is to provide the board with an update on our work. So that's what I'm going to do tonight. Our goal this year was to continue to educate our students, staff, and parents about staying healthy. And what we did this year was we divided up into groups and worked on 6 projects. One of them, and that's not intended for you to read, but a lot of times we have all of these rules and laws about food sales to our students at schools, and sometimes that's confusing. And so this year, Sue Thorson and I and others put our heads together and thought, how can we put it on one sheet and just make it clear for everybody? So that was one thing we did. We also reminded people about our district guidelines, our board policy. Like one line in there that says food provided in the classroom by school staff must meet or exceed state and federal nutrition standards. I don't think we would have had those cookies given out today, maybe the low-fat ones. But also a reminder that students look at what us adults do, and so if as much as possible in our lunchrooms, in our classrooms, we can have healthy food as well as treats, that would be a good example for our students. A couple of the people worked together, and, you know, sometimes there are celebrations, especially at the elementary level, and so they put, this is just the first page, but they put together a little handout so that teachers could use those as a guide, but also when there are parent volunteers, be able to give them a simple document to use to just keep everybody thinking about how we can have these celebrations still be fun and healthy. Wellness tips in English and in Spanish. We established these last year. We added some more, and what we do is we disseminate them to our school sites so that the schools can include them in their newsletters or that students could read them in the bulletins at the secondary level. We drafted some wellness survey questions, and we didn't use them. See, we even have one we have highlighted. We're still thinking about the wording there. But our intention is to make those part of our larger survey, hopefully next year, as part of our culture of kink. But it also would list what's the local produce for that month so that you can go out and try new fruits and veggies. And we're going to see if maybe we can produce these little calendars that people can put on their refrigerators, be able to distribute them to all our parents and keep that wellness message in front of everybody's eyes. And then our First Lady, Michelle Obama, has been backing this campaign, Let's Move. And so one idea we also want to put into place for next year, and this is really a draft at the elementary, being able to produce these posters to put in our classroom so that it's a constant reminder and it's a quick, you know, five easy messages there. We also came up with a version for secondary where the people are a little bit older. And then we would distribute a little pack, very simple, with the five simple steps to success that explain those five areas of Let's Move. And when I come back next year, we'll probably have more information about what California is doing, because Let's Move is organized by Michelle Obama. But Tom Torlakson said California is going to get in on that action, and we're going to have Let's Go California. Okay? Thank you. Any questions?
Is this I like the idea in general, but my one question is this why FFA can't have tri-tip sales? And
can't anymore?
During lunch? That's correct. It's against our laws for them to do that.
And so PTAs are not exempt from this, or booster clubs are not exempt from?
There are certain laws that say between, you know, half an hour before school starts and half an hour after school starts, food sales to students are restricted. After school events that are right after and, you know, put on by parents, they're exempted. There's, you know, it's kind of a little loophole or Swiss cheese sometimes approach, and so it's sometimes hard to navigate, but our committee just tries to stick with the positive, follow the law, and try to educate, not be the wellness police, but just try to encourage everybody to do what's right.
I appreciate it. I don't appreciate the legislators' misguided attempt to kill activities, or maybe they didn't consider that, but thank you.
Thank you, Rita, and I appreciate the healthy discussion we just had. We look forward to this for next year.
Thank you, Mr. President. Since we met last, the governor's May revise to the January budget has been released. And in general, the information that the governor's providing us is very positive for school districts for the first time in a long time. The essential pieces of his May revise are, and these are the good news, is there'll be flat funding from 2010-11 into 2011-12. Essentially, we're going to get what we got this year, next year. So we would have had a 8.92% reduction in our calculated revenue limit, amounting to about $4.2 million, plus $349 per student withheld by the state of California. That's now gone away. The $349 comes from a $330 and a $19 reduction that goes away. So all in all, because of the $6.6 billion worth of revenue that the state basically enjoyed that wasn't looked for, the governor was able to reconstitute his January budget proposals and bring education up to a level in 11-12 that they enjoy, spoken with quotes around it, in 10-11. The primary focus on the continuation of the current tax structure, the extension of the current tax structure, is probably going to be an issue for an election in the future. And by the future, maybe November, maybe 2012, but most likely not to be enacted in that's a little early. That wasn't part of this one, but that's okay. In 11-12. The slide up on the wall reflects some discussion that we're going to have about our current budget projection for 11-12 versus our 10-11. And there'll be two pages that we'll go through, and it'll give you a better understanding of how the impact of the May revision is going to look and feel for our budget in 11-12. The main issue for us is that the flat funding from 10-11 to 11-12 is extended. We will have a fair share of pain, as I spoke of, 8.92%, equaling $4.2 million. We originally had projected $6.2 million, $6.4 million, potentially up to $10 million. That's now off the table, not to be revisited, and in the year of 11-12. We'll see what 12-13 brings us.
Questions from Mr. Miller? Okay. Dr. Prater.
Good evening, Board. I would like to, first of all, acknowledge the comments that were made by our guest tonight regarding the Adults with Disabilities Program. And I jotted some notes down, and what I heard was the People First organization is a critical feature to providing advocacy for adults with disabilities. And I've heard nothing but very powerful things about that organization and that group. I also acknowledge that our teachers that are currently with us have over 100 years of collective experience in our district. That can't be understated. The impact they've made through the years has been no doubt amazing, impressive, and long-lasting. And this evening, I am sharing with you the cruel irony in all this, in that Adults with Disability is close to my home, I'm very close to my nephew, who is an adult with disabilities, with a significant disability, and he lives in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and benefits from a host agency that works with him and his family. I shared this context this evening. I shared it today with my parents, my mother in particular, and it brought her to tears. So I'm letting you know that I acknowledge what's being said, and I don't take any of these conversations lightly, and I know you don't either. I took some notes down today, and I wanted to do that because I think it's important that I not lose focus. For decades, our adult school programs were funded with restricted categorical dollars through the state of California. In other words, adult school funding was required to be used for just that, providing adults with high school diploma classes and offering a wide range of opportunities from English as second language to career classes, all the way to serving adults with disabilities. In 2008, these categorical restrictions were lifted. That's a fancy political maneuver to push the decision to the local level. So the categorical restrictions were lifted, allowing districts to redirect funds into the general fund. throughout the state since 2008, these dollars have been used to redirect resources and funds to the core K-12 mission. Adult education programs are taking a major hit in California as a result, with either the complete elimination of the program or a drastically scaled back model. For three decades, San Luis Coastal has developed and refined its adult education program by serving thousands of adults in our community. In fact, prior to the legislators' decision to sweep categorical dollars into the general fund, San Luis Coastal created a win-win genius business education model, I might add, by developing a partnership with Achievement House, Pathpoint, and Casa de Vida, who serve adults with disabilities. San Luis Coastal provided certificated adult teachers to supplement these programs while simultaneously earning revenue from the state through ADA. In short, adults with disabilities who participated in these organizations in San Luis Obispo benefited from our skilled staff, and we earned substantial revenue from the state. This highly evolved program of supporting adults with disabilities in San Luis Obispo is second to none, and that needs to be stated. It speaks to our awareness of supporting adults who are most vulnerable and do not necessarily have a voice in our community. Now, with that said, this win-win scenario ended in San Luis Coastal when the legislature effectively decided to sweep the categorical dollars into the general fund. Since 2008, San Luis Coastal has continued to fund the adult school programs by using the reserves that were accumulated of our adults with disability staff. They truly are amazing human beings doing amazing work. Unfortunately, you hired me to guide you and make recommendations to you. And I want to frame it this way. We our calling, our mission is a K-12 mission. The state legislature has confirmed that. As stated in our mission, and I want to read this to you. I took it off our wall today and I typed it, and I think it's important that we read it. The mission of San Luis Coastal Unified School District is to educate students to become self-sufficient individuals who are capable of making significant contributions to society and managing change in the culturally diverse world community. This district guarantees to provide the highest quality programs and services which will give all students the opportunity to realize their full intellectual, physical, creative, emotional, and social potential. As we weigh in on our next steps in the budget development process, it is my responsibility to provide recommendations to the board that will best achieve our stated purpose as an organization. In the weeks ahead, I must adhere to that commitment, and I will. And there's things in life that I'm facing as superintendent is that sometimes we have to make decisions that are just untenable, that are rotten. And unfortunately, this is one of those things that I'm trying to develop a recommendation for you in the coming weeks that you can somehow rest at night knowing that you've done the right thing. And I'm struggling to make that because I don't know exactly what that looks like, but I will bring my best recommendation forward to you in the coming weeks. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Prater. Let's move on to item number one, proposed revisions to Board Policy 3100, referring to the budget. Mr. Miller?
Actually, I'm going to take this,
Julie,
for Mr. Miller.
Mr. Miller, you changed and you're much better looking.
It's much shorter. Much shorter.
Much
too.
Shorter.
And quieter. Tonight we're presenting for your discussion and possible approval, if you choose to do so, the revisions to Board Policy 3100, which has to do with our budget. Most of the changes to this policy are just changing or adding language to the policy that aligns with CSBA recommendations and really aligns it to our current procedures. However, there is one area that is new policy, and it's on page 1.3 under fund balance. And Government Accounting Standards Board Statement 54 requires governments now to report their ending balances a little bit differently than we used to. And I'll just kind of run down the list for you. What we used to call reserve for inventory and prepaids is now going to be called non-spendable items. Restricted balances haven't changed. They're still restricted. What we used to call designated unassigned, but it'll have a separate line item. And you'll see this on the budget that we present in a couple of weeks. They'll have these new categories on there. Some other new wording is included in the long-term financial obligations portion, which has to do with our other post-employment benefits, and it just gives us a little bit more detail about those. And if right now I'd like to open it up for questions or comments or discussion.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the board. Mr. Quisenberry.
Just a question about the GASB Statement 54. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that I can get a copy of that to see what
sure.
you know, what it entails?
Sure.
Great.
I could
Thank you.
Send you a link or something, yeah.
Okay. Anybody else? I wanted to comment on, let me find it, page 22 where I made this note. Where we're actually, it says the board review shall also identify supplemental information regarding contingent liabilities, use of one-time monies, revenues for ongoing expenditures, use of ongoing revenues for one-time expenditures, contingent revenues, contributions, long-term commitments, unfunded liabilities, and status of labor negotiations. And I just think this is great language. I think it really clarifies our obligation to specify one-time monies versus ongoing monies, and I think that will help make things clearer to people, so I like that very much. Any other comments on this? We can, if the board doesn't have a problem with this language as it stands, we can go forward and take a vote tonight, or we can bring it back. Jim, do you have any concerns about this that you'd like to see it brought back? Okay, would somebody like to make a motion on this?
I'll move that we approve the changes to board policy 3100 as presented.
Okay, it's been moved by Mr. Buckman.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Angel. Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 2. Are you presenting this one also,
yes.
Mr. Miller?
I don't play. This revision to board policy 3220.1 regarding our lottery funds is really just changes in language. It doesn't change the way we report lottery funds or the way we spend them. I don't know if you have any questions or comments about this one.
Okay, let me go to the public. Is there anybody that would like to address the board on this item? Okay, seeing none, I'll bring it back. I'm going to go to Mr. Buckman first and then Mr. Quisenberry.
Just have a quick question, Julie. In the very first paragraph, the Board of Education intends to use California State Lottery funds for supplemental and non-reoccurring expenditures, and the word non-reoccurring seems to be the new word in there. Is that state law that's adding that word, or is that board policy or CSBA?
This is aligning it with CSBA recommendations, and my guess is because it's not we can't rely on this funding. It fluctuates.
Lottery money is spent a year in arrears, essentially. So
that
before
is how we, do
we don't spend this year's money, we spend last year's money so that we know how much.
That's correct. Yeah.
And isn't it what about 2% a total of about 1 or 2% of our total budget?
Oh, gosh, I think 1%.
1% of our total budget, yeah. So. Just a sort of a reminder to people that the windfall that was promised with the lottery has certainly not materialized, although we're happy to have any money we can.
Right.
I would the windfall did fall, but it fell for Bally's and the people that wrote the proposition.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, exactly. The the gaming machine people. Is there any other comments from the board on this one? Do we want to go ahead and take a vote on this as well? Okay. Can I take a motion on this, please? Been moved by Mr. Quesenberry?
Seconded
by Mr. Angel. Is there any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on to item number 3.
There we go again. Okay. And this is Board Policy 3314.2, which has to do with our revolving funds. And again, it's just adding and revising language to align it with CSBA recommendations. I don't think there's really anything new in here. I know that the board takes its fiduciary responsibility to effectively manage and safeguard districts' assets and resources very, very, sorry, I lost my train of thought. Seriously, thank you. section on the alternative revolving cash has to do with the petty cash funds that go to the sites and the departments. And we've been doing that for years, and it's just a small amount of funds that go there, and we collect them at the end of the year. So any questions or comments on this board policy?
Let me go to the public first to see if there's anybody that wants to address the board on this item. And seeing no one, I'll go to Mr. Quesenberry first, and then back to Mr. Buckman, and then Mr. Angel.
Well, you answered part of my question. My other part was, in the site-specific funds, does that have anything to do with the funds that the students generate through the ASB, the Associate Student Body Funds, and that
no,
sort of thing?
No, this is just revolving cash funds. Cash, okay. So, yeah, this is just petty cash,
right,
as far
you.
As the sites are concerned, yeah.
I know, Julie, you mentioned that it's just a small amount, but if you could just give us at the school sites the amounts are.
Elementary sites get $500. I think middle school is $750, and I think the high schools get $1,000.
Mr. Quesenberry and I shared the same concerns.
Yeah, and I appreciate that question, too, because I think in one of the issues we had in past audits, although it's been rectified, was concern about how those student funds were being handled. And mm-hmm. So, yeah. Is there any further discussion on this item? Okay. Shall we take a vote on this one as well? Okay. I'll take a motion on it.
I'll move approval of the changes to Board Policy 3314.2.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mrs. Rock.
I'd like to combine them for discussion purposes, recognizing that they are both separate, if that's okay by you. All right. Just a review. This is Baywood Elementary. Our portable project has trimmed down a bit to a single portable located where it was designed for a future in 1997. There's actually capacity for two more portables in this location. We're moving forward with just one portable now to allow for the movement of an SDC class into an existing building, which is about right there, and displace the sixth grade class into the new relocatable location. If we could go to C.L. Smith. We have two portables in this location that are new, and we are displacing one from this location to this location. This is going to be a kindergarten class, and this is going to be a primary grade class. It's an expansion-related change. Currently, they're housing a kindergarten class in this one classroom up here. It's a first-grade classroom, and they need space for growth. It's also a site that will take on growth on the south part of our city and needs additional capacity for that initially. And we have also taken capacity away from the school and with special ed programs that utilize existing classrooms that were reasonably vacant, but they don't contribute great enrollment. There might be 8 to 10 kids per classroom. So we're not increasing enormous amount of enrollment. The kindergarten and the primary grade could be as many as 50 kids in a given year. I'm asking for the board to accept my recommendation to approve the findings of the preliminary environmental assessment and make the determination that the project qualifies for the categorical exemption class 14 minor additions to schools, which, to briefly recap, would be an increase in capacity for students of up to 25% of existing or no more than 10 classrooms. We are categorically exempt. It's a determination made through legislature that it has no environmental impact. And authorize the superintendent or his designee to file the necessary documents. Any questions regarding the projects?
Okay. Let me go to the public first and see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address on either item number 4 or item number 5. And seeing no one, I'll go with Mrs. Sheffer first, and then Mr. Quisenberry and Mr. Buckman.
Jeff, I just have a question about the growth attributable to the pre-K programs that we have. I know at C.L. Smith, are those expected to grow as well, the student population?
Currently, we have a preschool program, if you will, at C.L. Smith with our parent participation program. We also have, I believe, preschool special ed. Also utilize the existing play space that's there if we're to expand further with preschool demands. We'll see how the movement is.
And would that, if you expand back that way, will it affect the availability of the fields for the students and the?
No. We did some calculations in our play areas. Baseball in particular is not impaired by the dimension of the build-out of portables in the future. Okay. We'll maintain that radius.
Thank you.
Yeah, my question just relates to the Baywood. I'm just a little confused here. There's currently 3 portables there on the 8 site, on the 8 available sites.
There's 5, and there's 5. Room for 3.
3, okay, all right. And then we approved a portable in a previous board meeting for the Baywood site.
The purchase of a portable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that is that going to be on one of those? Is that part of the 5 or part of the?
That's this one right there.
Okay.
That's the 24x40.
Okay.
It's a very simple building, no bathroom, just a sink and space.
Thank you.
Regular classrooms type.
Yeah, hi, Jeff. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that you've already thought of this, but let me ask this question. If we go back to C.L. Smith, and in the lower left, that's the new, it's going to be the kindergarten.
Kindergarten is right here.
Right.
It's a 36x40 building.
And when you're
the existing kindergarten buildings are right there. There are 2.
And you're moving.
And then they will share the space all together. We'll expand the play area. This portable that was moved to here is Sun and Fun. And it will share space, in a sense, with the STAR program.
Okay.
So it makes for a nice unit area.
Okay, so the ball field is there? Is that what I'm seeing?
Ball field is here, and there's also one in this lower corner.
All right, and I know that AYSO has had a structure there. Is that going to be removed? Or is that
there's
still there?
A shed here. There's a shed there. This shed.
Sounds like the three pigs.
What's that? Oh, your shed, their shed. the sheds are mobile.
Okay.
You know, it's really not an obstacle.
Okay.
We will work with what we have to do to make that functional for the site. Okay.
And in the bad old days at AYSO, this is where the kids would test their shoes for water security and play in the mud. Is this?
It's not so muddy at this time.
Okay.
Okay. There's a turf irrigation. It's usable space.
Okay, and all the hookups and everything are there.
There's hookups to this one now. We can tie into what goes to this location here for sewer and water, which was brought over here just last year, or 2 years ago, and we also have spare conduit that was brought over for electrical and data,
And, which is where all the water has gone. No,
yeah, probably. And no, actually it hasn't. I checked. And we also have a garden that will be displaced to this corner, and we're working with the site faculty that are very excited and, okay. about changes.
Great. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Any other comments from board members? So what you're asking for us this evening is to... the motion was made by Mrs. Rogers, seconded by Mr. Angel. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move then to item number 5.
Thank you.
Is there? Well, we've got to do item number 5 still, Jeff.
You can go, but taking a chance. Wouldn't miss this.
Is there anybody that would like to make a motion on item number 5?
I'll move to accept approval of item 5 as presented.
Okay. It's been moved by Mrs. Sheffer and seconded by Mr. Buckman. Any further discussion? All in favor? Aye. Carries 6-0. Thank you very much, Jeff.
That being said, I'll move on.
Okay. Let's move on then to item number 6. And this is these are the SMART goals to support the initiatives for student success. Dr. Prater.
Good evening, board. Just to frame out this presentation, I will give basically I will characterize and frame out the SMART goal conversation with a rationale, and then Mr. Robinette will come up and speak to you about the three different parts of each of the SMART goals. There's the SMART goal itself that's been annualized from the adopted initiatives. Then there's the programmatic implications, and then there's the budgetary implications. And he'll speak to each of those three things rather swiftly, and then allow each of you a chance at following each initiative to ask questions or respond. Okay? But first, I'd like to frame it out. As the school year begins to draw to a close, it is report card season. Students and parents anticipate with mixtures of joy and trepidation what those marks will be. As we begin the process of adopting measurable goals for our district and aligning valuable monetary resources towards these goals, I'd like to give you my own assessment, my report card of San Luis Coastal. We call report cards progress reports these days because by design they just don't tell us how we're doing, but where we need to go, where we have hit the mark, and where we need to make improvements. Under the subject student achievement, we appear to be above average, proficient. Our API and AYP scores are commendable, steady. Many of our students are doing very well. But there are some underlying concerns that should actually alarm us. Some of our schools are showing similar school ratings that are putting them in the lower deciles. In other words, when comparing our scores to schools with the same demographics as us, we don't look so good. The question is, why? The Nonprofit Education Trust just published a report that is based on 4 simple but important criteria. 1, student performance as measured by standardized exams. 2, improvement over the last 5 years on those exams. 3, the achievement gaps existing between low-income students, students of color, and white students. And 4, the level of college readiness, completion of the A through G requirements, serious work to do. There are districts like ours who are doing much better with fewer resources than we have. Our initiatives for student success and the goals associated will tend to that important work. Under the subject school climate, we have much reason for pride. In this season of open houses and end-of-the-year celebrations like this evening, it is apparent that having small neighborhood schools with dedicated teachers, staff, leaders, and volunteers is no doubt a community treasure. But the demands of an increasingly complex set of circumstances are putting heavy pressure on this school culture. Homelessness, growth of EL families, unemployment, bullying behavior, truancy, and special education demands land at our schoolhouse doors each day. It is our obligation and ultimately our privilege as public educators to bolster the supports needed for our community to maintain that positive culture. Our initiatives address these things. We realize now, more than ever before, our need to develop partnerships with community and business organizations and meld our efforts toward the common purpose of supporting our children and their families. In the heading Employee Relations, we obviously have some work to do. We are in the fourth year of annual impasses between the San Luis Coastal Teachers Association and the Board of Education. While we have always come to settlement over issues, it is troubling that we continually reach this point. Objective measures indicate that our teachers are compensated better than most in our county, enjoy working conditions, benefits, duty days, sick leave, and class sizes that are the envy of the region. But impasses aren't really about objective measures. They are rooted in trust, in a lack of team spirit and unity. I, as superintendent, take full responsibility for this. And I would hope that the SLCTA would also. We don't have this trust issue with our other bargaining units. Our initiatives for student success have specific goals toward achieving better bargaining protocols, and we have made every attempt to ground our future work right down to the classroom floor where it makes the most difference, the work that teachers do every day. For the subject fiscal policy, our board deserves, in my opinion, an A. San Luis Coastal has managed to maintain salary schedules that keep us at or near the top every year. We have a reserve for economic uncertainty that will help us weather the storms that have forced other districts into massive layoffs and furloughs and cut valuable programs. We have come close to completely funding our post-retirement benefits for employees so that there is safety and health benefits. Their safety and health benefits will continue as promised in our contracts. We have maintained employment at a time when unemployment is at near record levels, and we have placed our money into student programs where it belongs. Being wise stewards of the taxpayers' dollars is a mandate. This board should be proud of its efforts. The board is going to be asked to spend a portion of our unallocated reserves and leftover jobs bill money towards our initiatives to support, that is, goals that can be attained, measured, and for which we can hold ourselves accountable. We have attached plans and resources to these goals. Our budget development work over the next two meetings will be directly tied to these goals. District leaders and school boards manage the levers of change at the school level and make critical decisions regarding staffing and resources. These decisions can free our site leaders to achieve remarkable results. District leaders also provide the vital strategic leadership necessary to improve teaching and learning at the school and classroom levels. The SMART goals reflect a measured, specific, and focused approach to ensuring future success for our students. We are at an interesting time for San Luis Coastal. The budget news at the state level seems more positive for public education than was originally thought. The legislature weighing in on the governor's proposal and the possibility of a ballot initiative will determine how good or bad that news really is. We will still give back over $4 million. We have been honoring some fantastic employees. We have been highlighting achievements of specific students doing incredible things at the state and national levels. Hundreds of thousands of dollars of scholarship money will be handed out over the next month to our graduates. We will be entering a fact-finding process that we hope yields an acceptable settlement with our teachers. And most importantly, we will be asking the board to adopt a budget that will guarantee success for our students. One of the most significant events, though, may be the English Language Advisory Committee meeting held last week at Pacheco Elementary. Because it is symbolic of our direction. Hundreds of Latino families came together at the request of Principal Rick Mayfield and teachers of the school. A mutual commitment was made. Parents, grandparents, and siblings pledged to push their students toward high academic achievement, while the school promised to embrace their children under the banner, "All means all," when it comes to providing the best possible education to their children. This is our corporate mission, and I say carpe diem, or seize the day, for now is our time to act.
Thank you, Dr. Prater.
Well, I am going to attempt to, in a highly Reader's Digest version, go through these initiatives because I understand and I know that Dr. Prater had the opportunity to speak to all of the board members about them and have you take a look at them. But first of all, I need to acknowledge some very good work that has been put into this document. Rita Delkiskamp, Jackie Kirk-Martinez, Amelia Samoes, and Amy Shields spent hours creating goals and program actions that are aligned to each of our initiatives for student success. They spent weekends working on this. Julie Lang and her team spent time placing dollar values to the human and other resources that will be anticipated to take these actions. So it's quite a team that has worked very hard on this. And I'll probably be asking them to field questions you might have also. Our attempt here is very straightforward. We want to create attainable, specific goals for the next year in each of the 10 areas that are part of our initiatives for student success. So they are modest in some areas by design. We want to get some victories. We want to actually be able to we are focusing our sights on what matters most. So I will go very briefly through each one, highlighting the general goals, programs, and budget, and allow for questions after each of the 10 initiatives. This is a draft, so it's very important that your input and questions and concerns are given to us so that we can develop this into a plan and into a budget, because we're looking to develop a budget at the next meeting and budget recommendations for next year. So Kim will try to kind of keep up with me maybe. But initiative one is basically we are focusing our efforts on making substantial gains with English learners, students who are socioeconomically disadvantaged, homeless foster youth, special education students, and those students most needing targeted interventions. Those are what the goals are all about, and there's measurements for each one of those goals. If you look at the actual implementation, which I think is probably the next page, Kim, what you will see is that our design, the district actions, which will be aligned to school actions, will increase administrative and coaching support in classrooms, the breakthrough coaching model we've been employing. They will provide extra clerical support at the sites, teachers on special assignments who in many ways become adjunct faculty to our sites. You will see intervention in the form of additional teachers at each of our elementary school, one additional full-time equivalent at each elementary school for the purpose of intervention, additional program specialists, summer planning teams made up of teachers and administrators to work on goals, a targeted summer school, secondary sections for specific subjects, additional EL aides, additional EL specialists, and professional development. And if you look at the next page, you'll see the price tag for this is $1.7 million. This is mostly, as you can see from the budget outlay, in increased employment to serve these purposes. So I can entertain questions or comments about Initiative 1, and I guess we'll just move that way if that serves the board best.
Thank you. I had noted here a question under district site and summer schools, some summer school transportation, and then the beefing up of the summer school programs and offerings. And I had noted, how are students directed to summer school that will benefit from it?
Well, currently, most of our summer school is not in the enrichment area. It's in target intervention. That's our current practice. And those referrals are primarily through teacher and principal request. I mean, students are not necessarily choosing to go to summer school. We're choosing who should go to summer school, and I believe that will be even more of our design as we look at summer school being a very targeted intervention program. Am I characterizing that okay?
Okay. So with our youngers, there is no parent-teacher conference on the third marking period, but at some point towards the end of school, when I say youngers, I guess I mean our elementary students, that parents would be contacted?
It's done at the end of second trimester parent-teacher conference. And by then we have the summer school forms with us and say, sign up.
Okay, and thank you. So that's at the elementary level. Then middle and high school, does a forum
value as it is, we believe we can get even more bang from our buck.
But we're double dosing.
Yes.
Okay. And we will have one on the one elementary program on the coast, and one secondary program on the coast, and the same in town.
I believe the funding for this is to keep. Yeah, maybe Gray can talk better, but I think the funding level of this is to keep our same commitment, which would be exactly what you say: one on the coast, one on the city, making sure we have secondary supports, and then we've also had some individual school sites doing with their own funding, their own programs.
Great. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hoffman.
Well, that's the exciting thing that is evolving, is we have traditionally done it, as you've said, with one site on each end of the district. And what's happened over the last several years is we've had a proliferation of what we euphemistically call the boutiques, which is the individual schools that have come forward and said, we can serve our kids best at our school with our teachers and our material. Can we get the blessing to do that? And like I say, that number is expanding pretty dramatically. So schools have recognized that they are the prime mover in having students experience success during that blank window. As a matter of fact, I recently saw a research from Johns Hopkins, which was tracking that summer period over 12 years as being the primary factor in an achievement gap, saying that during the school year, kids make comparable progress. It's that big window when they're not in school that some kids move forward with enriched summer activities, trips to museums, trips to the lake, vacations to grandma's, while some kids spend the time in front of the TV. And that difference times 12 accounts for a huge difference over the course of their education. And as Dr. Prater and Rick have said, this district has been able to continue to maintain a summer school and is now putting even more concentrated focus on putting the students that need it into an extended time, not an optional time, but a highly, highly recommended time.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have a couple of quick questions here on page 6.3. In regards to the additional expenditures for interventions, that would be interventions in math and reading, and those would be in addition to students that will be enrolled in a math class, and this would be an additional period or a portion of a period, is that correct?
Correct.
And then likewise with reading?
Correct.
Is it our intention that to make those classes available just for EL students or for any student that's struggling in their English class or their math class?
Yeah, the additional sections that we're proposing giving to the secondary schools for this coming year, both our middle schools and our high schools, is really to be determined by design by the sites. We really want to give them to the site leadership to figure out where it makes most sense. But the idea is to identify specific students, whatever category, EL, special ed, homeless, you know, because all of these initiatives are focused on specific subgroups, and get those students into those, in some ways, sometimes double-dip types of classes, or in other ways, just a separate targeted standalone, like a reading intervention class.
We currently have some of these classes on board, at least I know it at,
yes,
at the high school level. I assume also at the middle school. Mm-hmm. So are you anticipating this 12 sections in addition to what we're currently doing, or just 12 total?
You know, I'm not sure. I think it's always in addition.
It's in addition, okay. And then regarding the clerical staffing, clerical support. Mm-hmm. It says 6.25 or 6 1/4 full-time equivalents. Is that in terms of additional hours of clerical support that's being offered, or actual additional people that are going to be hired?
It's hours. This refers to the elementary schools where Currently, we have a formula basis for our elementary schools depending on their size. So an elementary school of 300 might have 3 hours of secretary clerk time. An elementary school like Pacheco, much larger school, maybe has 5 hours of secretary clerk time. What this is proposing is to do away with the formula, if you will, and give a standard of 6.25 hours of secretary clerk time to each of the elementary sites so that essentially there is a secretary clerk there while the students are there. So the school secretary is freed up. And part of this design is to support the office staff and get our principals into classrooms to support these initiatives. So it's all tied in with that.
Mr. Buckman.
Thank you. Obviously a tremendous amount of work. Did you bring your pillows? I have some questions on Initiative 1. We were going to be talking about specific student populations. We had identified 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5 specific populations, and they're not specifically pulled out in each of these direct district actions. Is the intent then that the homeless and the SEDs are just commingled within these in the district actions on the left?
So you're looking back at the SMART goal and the specifics and where are they within?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So there's targeted interventions, the extra sections, the teachers on special assignment devoted. Yeah. It's a combination of all those.
Okay. Great. On the earlier ones that Mr. Quisenberry was talking about, at the top of 6.3 in the upper right, 12 secondary interventions, are those pull-out programs or are those within the classrooms? We're not going to – are we doing more pull-out programs?
They're at the secondary, so they're actual
classes. These are credit classes.
Gotcha. Okay. When we look at the 6.4 and we start looking at the budget, one of the concerns I had, and it was a question – and now it's a bigger question. You've identified for Mr. Quisenberry the 6.25 clerical support as being hours. Mm-hmm. These same number shows up repeatedly with a $0 amount.
Correct.
In other initiatives.
Correct. So what we want to do is make sure we're not repeating things twice within our budget. So you're going to find that in many of these areas,
right,
we're not trying to budget them twice. We're attaching these to different initiatives.
Okay. It has also another effect, though. It also pumps up this one.
Correct.
To 1.7.
This looks like a outrageously expensive initiative, and there's a couple others that look like that compared to an $8,000 initiative.
Okay. Sure. So I just want to make sure it's the same. We're not another 6.25 and another.
Right. This was the first one, so we threw it all here.
Okay, good. And I think that would be great on Initiative 1. Thank you very much.
All right. Initiative 2.
Mr. Angel.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, Mr. Angel.
So you're 9. I love the work you guys put into it, and I'm pleased to see you're adding more teaching staff. The 9 elementary certificated positions, just one per elementary side, is that
yes,
to lower class size numbers?
No. The intent is not as a class size reduction. The intent is for each of the leaders at the school site with their management teams to determine where that full-time equivalent is best utilized at the school. For example, I was talking to Dr. Schoolis today at Monarch Grove. He's looking at a combination of several part-time positions to do actual intervention work as part of that. I'm sure there are other schools who may be looking at it as, half-time assignments here or there, or if their goals need to be solely focused on EL learners, it might be to increase that. If it needs to be focused on math achievement, maybe something in that regard. So we're really the attempt here is to take some district resources, get it to the sites where they know how to best use it, and through their own singles plans for student achievement to use those resources.
And then the back to the intervention sections. So those will be taken in lieu of call them mandatory electives, I guess. Is that?
perhaps, you know, what we've done some experimenting with it. For example, Los Osos Middle School with some zero period, seven period classes. It may not be in lieu of. It may be in addition to. Kind of depends on how the schedule works out. There's a lot of creative stuff that you can do with, you know, classes that you go into but then come back out of into another program, so you're not locked into a program for an entire trimester, semester, quarter, whatever. So again, we'll be working with the school sites to determine how best to utilize those.
I totally appreciate that. You hate to lock kids into just math and science all day and not get the chance to explore, especially in the middle
levels. It kind of defeats the purpose sometimes of what we're doing.
It does, but it's, you know, it's such a delicate balance. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about what Mr. Angel is saying. I don't know if this would affect students' graduation requirements and the number of units that they would be taking and where that might fall. Hopefully our students are achieving their A to G requirements. So how something like this might affect it, I think that's something that I would ask you guys to also be aware of and look at.
I think it's a really good point for us to look into as we develop, because we'll be bringing, I'm anticipating bringing new course offerings and things like that, and we'll need to, I think, look at it in the whole framework of graduation and A through G. It's a really good point.
Yes, with the 9 FTEs at the elementary schools, I really appreciate that the sites can kind of self-determine how they can best use those positions. But my question has to do with flexibility. If there's a site that determines they need help, say in primary reading and then upper grade math, can they use that for two half times?
Oh, I hope
or
so.
Shift
that's
around
the idea.
And share with other sites.
Absolutely.
And kind of collaborate mm-hmm. to make the most of.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm quite certain our elementary
so
principals are working
creative,
behind the scenes frantically and creatively trying to figure out how to make this work.
Yeah, well, I really support that creative, the ability to creatively use that to address student needs. So, thank you.
Because we realize even with these district goals of, you know, achieving a certain percentage point, schools are in different places. There are schools who have achieved it. And so they need to be targeting their work, their intervention into other areas. And so we need to, you know, support that.
One more question. So the 9 teachers, back to that again. That's similar to something that, like Lucia Marr, I think they are doing that with some of their jobs bill money, bringing teachers in. Is that similar to that?
No, I don't know.
We
have a Lucia Marr guy here. I don't know.
He's a high school guy, though, Eagle.
Ah. I'm not sure what they were doing. On to initiative 2.
Procedural question.
Did you wish to address the board?
Well, I don't know how that works. Do we, as a public, wait like on the previous items until the whole item's over and then, or at each one, or is there a place for public comments at all? Or?
What I would prefer is, I think, if you can hold your comments until we get through all of them, that would be helpful, because, if you feel so moved to do that, that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay, initiative 2 is targeting a measurable reduction in truancy, increasing a culture of care through advocacy at our sites, increasing our reach of primarily Spanish-speaking employees to connect with our community, and making a larger commitment to counseling and guidance is kind of where the actual SMART goals are going. So what you're going to see in the program implementation is the need to forge some multi-agency connections, better truancy tracking and homeschool connections. You'll see a major investment in elementary counseling by the district, professional development, and the whole culture of care component, which is what the overall strategic initiative is about, a reorganization of our student support services department. And in this age of cyberbullying and sexting and all those issues, a look at internet safety. And so at the next page, the price tag for this is about $240,000. It's primarily staffing. Nearly half of that is towards an enhanced district commitment towards elementary counseling. And that's, I'm available for questions.
Thank you. I asked this question in my meeting with Dr. Prater, but I'll ask it again. Where is the school resource officer on the coast? Could you just answer that as you did before?
Well, we're not sure yet. We are actually, we had a good meeting with Mayor Yates and Andrea Luker, the manager of Morro Bay, and discussing the their desire to see us add a school resource officer, and we're waiting to see kind of what that price tag might look like. We need to determine, you know, how much of a full-time equivalent we would want to put into this, if at all, based on that and based on the school's desires and needs. But we'd like to achieve equity with San Luis Obispo, where we do have a full-time school resource officer. We have not had a school resource officer at Morro Bay for many years because it hasn't been funded. School resource officer at SLO High has been funded by SLO PD. It hasn't been funded by the Morro Bay Police Department or the Sheriff's Department. And we have to realize, too, two-thirds of the students at Morro Bay High School are Los Osos residents under Sheriff's jurisdiction. So there's a few other issues that need to be worked out there, but we are working on it.
So we would take the school's desire into consideration, whether or not they feel
it's pretty important.
Need.
Pretty important consideration,
yeah,
I would think.
I think so. Okay, thank you. And then I just had one other question.
Okay, can I just follow up on that,
oh,
too?
Sure.
So are you also in discussions with the sheriff about this, since all the schools in Los Osos are under the sheriff's jurisdiction?
Yeah, and what's what we've talked with Chief Parkinson is the keeping a resource officer who has been their DARE officer in the Los Osos area, so serving the Monarch Grove, Baywood, Los Osos Middle School community, not necessarily doing DARE education, but serving as a resource officer, which is what Susie has mostly been doing at the middle school level.
Officer Korea.
Yeah.
Okay, and then let me finish up here. I had noted under the, proposed additional expenditures, it says a safe data system initiated by the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education, and then a parenthetical, district's fiscal impact unknown. By that I wrote, what? Question mark?
Yeah, I'm going to need help with this one. I know what they're talking about, but I don't know about the unknown part. This is maybe Amelia? Yeah.
I just didn't know what the whole
thing
meant.
I think she can handle this one.
Okay.
Good evening.
Hi.
We were approached by the San Luis Obispo County Office of Education to collaborate with them on developing a database that would house data on students that are at risk. And so there's a variety of data that we keep and each school district in our county maintains, but they want to collectively put it into one centrally located database because a lot of times these students are transferring between schools within our district, and then we can share the data with other districts. So we're not sure what that cost is going to be. It's in its initial stages, so this is kind of a placeholder at this time.
Would we be sharing confidential student information?
With just the educators involved with those students. So if that student is now in Lucy Amar, used to be a San Luis Coastal, then that data would be shared, just like it would be if it was in a hard copy format for the CUME folder. It's now electronically available.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You know, I was going to say, with the board's permission, I think what I'd like to do is, thinking about what Mr. Buck-Moyer was asking, I think as soon as the staff makes their portion of the presentation, I will invite members of the public to come up before we take board comment on them. Okay. So, Mr. Buckmore, that said, would you like to come up and comment on that?
I just had a question about.
Sure, absolutely.
The lowering of class size on your.
Which can you direct us to what page you're looking at?
The big money one. What was it?
The big money.
Big money.
Show us that.
Oh, I get you. Initiative one. So one of the goals was on the left side, district action, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down, reduce class size, staffing, ratio in regular education classrooms. So I noticed there's a, is that for high school or just elementary school?
No, this is relative to special education. And the specific one, it has to do with the, right, you're saying reduced class size who enrolled in special day classes. So this is a specific special education one having to do largely with mainstream students into regular education classrooms and taking account of that impact.
So you want to reduce the ratio in a regular education
right.
classroom
of students,
in my classroom?
Right, of students who are being mainstreamed.
Right, so that I'll have less regular kids, so it makes me more capable of dealing with an increase of mainstreamed kids. Do I understand that right or no?
Yeah.
Okay. So if that's happening, then on the budget implications section, I just think maybe we've missed an estimated cost there somewhere, because the shadowing, the 12 secondary intervention sections, the shadowing sections, there's some money for that, and then the interventions for the
if you look on
the nine,
I'm sorry,
the nine sections,
four spots down, four you'll see increased FTE staffing allocations with SDC based on projected enrollment.
Thanks.
So. There you go.
Sorry to take
you. No, it's good.
No problem, Dave. Okay. Thank you. And then let's move on then to this one, number
two.
So Marilyn had a chance to speak. Who is next up? Mark?
Mark, then me.
Okay. Again, tremendous amount of work. Just generates thought and generates a lot of questions. This one's near and dear to my heart. Rick, when you were talking about this, I thought I heard you say something about a special emphasis on EL students. And is that part of what you were thinking was?
Well, we had an emphasis on looking for employment that is bilingual as a way of connecting with our community better.
Okay. I don't know where to start. Fairly shocked when we got back. Comments on the surveys on our initiatives by the amount of racism and hate that came through in this community.
Yep.
And so more and more I'm looking at this create an intentional culture of care and taking this one extremely seriously, because I think anything like that is going to just hinder all the rest of these initiatives. So as I look at that, I want to be sure that what I'm seeing here, create culturally competent learning environments. It's on 6.6, the third one down.
Mm-hmm.
And it, research and pilot. There are two ways that I've seen the district work. And one way is to spend a lot of sort of time creating a committee internally and spending a lot of time. And it seems like sometimes we're creating the wheel again, and then outside, just over the border, 10 miles away, somebody's already wrestled with this and come up with a solution.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see the word research, is that back to the model of committees within the district, or is that a thinking of researching visitation and going outside? And I'm seeing people shaking their heads yes over there. So, okay, that makes me.
I'm guessing it's a good combination of both. And I think that one of the things that we realize as this is my own editorial comment, I suppose, as we work on these initiatives, is that there is no room for a district like ours to be an island and not connect with our business community, with our nonprofit community, and I know this is dear to your heart, Mr. Buckman, with the agencies that are doing very similar things to us as we're doing. And there are curriculums and there are programs that have been developed that are being used in other school districts that we don't need to reinvent the wheel.
Okay.
But there are probably other opportunities and times where, you know, creating something from the ground up with our own, people involved in that creation, there's a lot of value in that too.
There is, and I appreciate that. Is there buried within here that I'm not seeing cultural diversity training, cultural awareness? Because I missed it if it's here, and I apologize.
I don't know.
Sort
Can
of staff development.
Written in here?
Was that the intent? You got it, Jackie? It would be under staff development, professional development. Okay.
And but so maybe we need to highlight that in some way. It might be a good
just
idea.
From, I mean, mm-hmm. you know. Right. And I just, let me see. For my own well-being, I want to know that the crew that's putting this together and those of us that are going to be voting on this are going to be voting on professional development that addresses
that issue.
That issue. Let's see what else. I'm starting to get, as I got to initiative two, I was starting to get concerned about the 6.2 clerical staff, who turns out to be now 6.25 hours.
6.25 hours, okay, full-time equivalents.
Okay, so now yeah. now it's spread out over initiative one and two.
And four. Yeah,
and
it's all over
so
the place.
So I just
place.
Want to start pointing that out.
Yes.
This is these hours are those magical expanding hours. So thank you for that.
Well, it's the same hours.
I know, but they're going to have to be like magic beans here, I think. So I just point that out as a concern that I have. And I appreciate your work on this initiative. Thank you.
Going back to the surveys, talking on truancy, page 6.5, decrease district truancy rate 41% to 36%. A comment was made by several people that this was a political initiative. You know, we just want to look good in the newspaper. And I'm going to say this, and I've probably said it before, that's BS. Yep. You know, one of the number one indicators of high school dropout is attendance in elementary schools. And so I appreciate the district really taking a hard look, even though we don't get money per parent told me, meet in the seat. I think it's very important that we have kids in our schools. And having said that, I read an article in the San Luis Obispo High School newspaper that said, why is no one coming to school? And one of the administrators said, you know, it's triage. I get a list of so many people, and we have to clear all these cuts. How are we going to support this administrators with the triage so we can clear these cuts? And
well, we're not recommending adding more administrators at our high school in the initiatives. You know, truancy is it's an interesting concept because it, you know, there's lots of reasons students do or don't go to school. You know, engagement in classes is a thing to look at. We're expecting the fact that we're going to spend more time with our leaders in classrooms will help us give us some hints in that area. But we also have a lot of myths that float around in our system, whether or not, you know, that the only reason we have a truancy issue is because parents take their kids off for vacations. And we need to track that data. Maybe it's true. I doubt it. We're not proposing adding administrative time to the high schools.
Is the clerical going to have? I didn't ask for that, but is the clerical going to be helping?
We've allocated. I think our recommendation is to add clerical support at one of our high schools to assist with that, but not at Slo High. I think Morro Bay High was allocated to have some additional clerical support.
Right. If I could interject,
so maybe some coaching then.
Yeah, if I could interject on that on truancy, I believe that we're going about it incorrectly. I was one of those VPs once that did the triage work. I remember it well. The antecedent of truancy is a lack of connection to the school, a lack of connection by the student, a lack of connection by the family, a lack of connection by the employees. And so what we really need to do, and this is why it's in this initiative, is we have to evaluate the antecedent for truancy and go after that, which in my view is a team effort, an outreach to parents, making school important to kids. And we do that by communicating our expectations and really as a whole unit reaching out and saying, if you're not here, if you're not in the seats, we pull the fire alarm, so to speak. We don't like We won't accept this. And it's going to take a lot of a collective energy. It's not on any one person's shoulder. It's on the whole team. And parents need to own up to this as well. And I don't think, I personally don't think that the approach of that we're how we're trying to handle truancy is the right path at all. I think we have to turn it on its head and do something differently. And this is what this is about.
And then just again, another plug for a web program for especially our middle schools. Web is where everybody belongs. Mm-hmm. It's there's six elementary schools feeding into seven elementary schools feeding into Laguna. Two elementary schools feeding into Los Osos Middle. Three elementary schools. Oh, man, excuse me. And so something like a web program would be.
Yeah, web and link, and there's some tremendous. Excellent programs out there.
More important for middle than high at this point, but okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Just one last. One of the comments that came through at least twice in the survey was, why does the board keep talking about truancy and not absenteeism? And I just want to mention that the word that's used is truancy, and that encompasses being absent from school. So as the board's kind of using the superintendent and all of us are not saying you've missed one class. The truancy means you've missed the whole day or one class or 1 hour. So right. I want to be clear about that. Chris, can I ask one other question? Okay, I'm sorry. As we go through this, is there going to be another opportunity for us to have this kind of specific interaction with staff, or is this before this comes back as budget proposals?
Yeah, I would welcome the opportunity to sit with each of you again and bring it back for our next board meeting as well.
Thanks.
On that line, are we going to encourage comments by teachers and so forth relative to what is here, questions and so forth? And will this, and parents, of course, yes.
You know, I
is this going to be posted, let's say, for example, on the website or?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
We've sent it to the principals for them to evaluate, give us feedback on, and basically this is our first blush to look through this. When you look at the timeline, you know, it's just, okay. It's becoming really challenging across the board for everybody right now. So
number three, okay. Initiative three, this one, you know, I've been in education for 29 years. This is one of the most exciting things I've come across, is the idea of adding preschool for those students who are not accessing it. So this initiative really is about getting started on preschool and transitional K. Transitional K is the program that will become mandated by the state to start those students who have been going to kindergarten at a very young age, getting them into essentially a two-year kindergarten program. And the intent of this is for those families who are not accessing preschool currently, either through subsidized preschool or through a private preschool. We're moving fast in some areas. So, you know, the board has been very active in some of the infrastructure aspects of this, but we're slow and steady in some others that have to do with program and staffing issues and credentialing and access and getting the word out and where we're going to be putting things and how it's going to be designed. But the idea here is to get started and to get a couple of transitional K programs and ideally four preschools by year's end, if not by the middle part of the year. So that's kind of where we're shooting for. I don't think we're going to be opening preschools necessarily in September. That might be a little ambitious. We're open to working on it, but I think it might be a little ambitious at this point. But really the initiative, if you look at the programmatic implications, is to begin the preschool and to begin the transitional K during this year, and to make sure that we have a very strong parent education component built into that. And the initial price tag for this, if you look at the next section, is $1.2 million. And it's largely infrastructure, about $800,000. Two-thirds of that is on the infrastructure, the playgrounds, the buildings, the portables. And but we do anticipate that, that the ongoing costs, again, not knowing kind of where the design ends up falling, are these going to be all-day preschools, half-day preschools, how's it going to be designed, will there be the ability for parents to pay as opposed to, you know, a free preschool for those that, who need it most. So there's a lot of issues that we need to figure out. But we do anticipate this is a, you know, probably a $400,000 to $500,000 ongoing cost. But there's a lot of things we have to develop in this area. But we, it's here because we want to get started. We want to get started on this. We believe this is going to make a significant difference in the achievement gap.
Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this one? Okay, we'll bring it back to the board. One thing I did want to note that I'm looking at this, and I'm looking at the 6,000 line, $784,000. I'm thinking that a lot of that money will be from developer fees and other things.
I know Russell's not feeling well and had to leave early, but I think it's entirely out of developer fees. This is not general fund dollars, okay, that portion.
Mrs. Sheffer and then Mr. Buckman.
Rick, I'm with you on this. I think that our that education is built on building blocks, and the sooner we can start laying the foundation and equitably so, we have so many kids starting out in kindergarten with the achievement gap already in place.
It is.
And I think this opportunity to narrow that early on, right at the start, is going to be so important in proceeding through all the goals. And it's one of the, once this is in place, I think doing something you love to do, which is following the data that we accumulate through this, is going to be really an interesting adventure to see what our kids really see, what all have the opportunity to see, what all our kids are capable of. And this is very exciting. And I just want to add that I know that we all know this already, but with indicating whether this will come back for additional public comment, whether the opportunity for input from teachers, staff, everyone out there, I would just encourage the two people who might be watching this on television, as well as people who in the community, that we always welcome input and the opportunity from everybody out there, the community at large, not just our parents and educators, but the families, the business community, to have any input and be involved in all the processes we go through here, not just this, not just today, but anytime.
Mark, go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Again, obviously a lot of hard work into this, and I like the fact the initiatives are now being broken down into bite-sized chunks, so it's June 2012 as opposed to now through the rest of the 97%
right.
increases, so it's really making this much easier to digest. I'm looking at 6.8 district actions to support development of preschools. And in the first box under proposed additional expenditures on the right, I'm seeing some very specific things like the 6.5 hours and the 3.5 FTE. But then I come down to bilingual community liaison. And I'm looking here, and then I'm looking in the budget. The budget's got $1,000 for something called
bilingual staff,
which is actually later on in this. So I'm assuming there's going to be some more effort put in, or not, some more thought.
And then we have a
sorry, thank you.
In a 5,000 account, which would be additional.
And thank you. And even as I looked at the 5,000, if we're going to try to attract families that we traditionally have trouble communicating and making outreach to, I'm concerned that 5,000 is a fairly small amount. Also, I'm looking at the next item down, printing costs. This is part of publicizing recruit students and families. Printing costs, publication outreach, and translation costs. The age the age of the parents that we're going to be trying and trying to reach are younger than X and Y and millennia and whatever the new group is. And I'm worried about, let me see, how do I phrase this?
Different modes of getting the word out.
I'm hoping that we're also thinking about Facebook and Twitter and social networking and ways that we haven't even thought about that will be available by the end of this summer, because these families may not even... The reason that Telegram Tribune is online now is because of this. So I would urge that we look at some of the newer technology that's out there to outreach to these families.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Jim?
Well, Mark sort of hit on a couple of things. The bilingual community liaison is, my concern is the amount of money allocated there and the fact that, I realize that outreach to these parents is going to be extremely important, but I also think that this is it's been, in my opinion, a need for a number of years that a person, that we needed someone that could do this for K-12
sure,
as well as the pre-K. And so I just wanted to note that. And then I had a question about the...
So we may need to be allocating more resources, I'm hearing, as a possibility there.
Well, especially if this could be tied also to the attendance issues, too. It's important that we contact these parents with someone who can explain the importance of their, student being in class, and clarify why they're not there. And there's some anecdotal information that you could probably get from Morrilby High School when that was done.
Yes,
it changed a lot of things. And then the last
thing
is
the person who did it too.
Right, I know the person who did it personally, but it's only anecdotal. And the other thing is the account clerk, and I see that that's going to be. That person is going to deal with other of the SMART goals. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And that this 36,000 will appear only here and not in five, seven, and ten.
That's pretty close to the overall.
Okay.
Pretty.
All right. Thank you.
The benefits are below, so that's probably salary. Yeah. Pretty accurate.
Number four.
Okay, good. All right. Number four, initiative four. There are modest increases, and this is our initiative on English language arts, and there are modest increases in the K-2 reading. This is an area where we've already seen substantial gains, actually, through our comprehensive literacy program. We're adding a writing component to that and focus attention on the upper elementary and the secondary reading programs through more targeted intervention. So when you look at the programmatic implications, you're seeing a continuing work on comprehensive literacy and that support, adding that writing component and additional sections primarily and some curriculum support. It's yet to be determined at the upper grade and secondary levels. Our price tag is about $322,000. It's largely teachers on special assignment, adding one at both or increasing it at the elementary level and adding one at the secondary level, and books, technology, curriculum, professional development.
Comments from the public on number four? Mr. Bedrigan?
Bruce Bedrigan, President of San Luis Coastal Teachers Association. Just an observation here. I'm getting more concerned about the TOSAs, the teachers on special assignment, as that continues to grow. Those teachers are replaced by temporary teachers who stay on temporary. The idea of a teacher on special assignment I thought was a great idea. Thought that idea of having a teacher on special assignment to bring someone who is closest to the situation to the students, bring in their expertise to work together with administrators, great idea, for a year, maybe 2 years. We just had a teacher on special assignment retire with over 23 years. I think we've gone way overboard on teachers on special assignment and the amount of time we have those teachers on those special assignments. Concerned that they become pseudo-administrators and they start performing administrative duties and not receive administrative pay. I think when we take some of our best teachers out of the classroom, then our students suffer. I want to keep that in mind. And also, the other thing that bothers me a little bit about these SMART goals is that it's, you know, where are the teachers? Rick mentioned all hit the great team, and they're all, wonderful people. Where are the teachers that were in on having a word in on these when these were being developed? Because otherwise it sounds top-down to me. I'm kind of disappointed in that.
Thank you. Comments from the board? Mark.
Yep, sorry. My only comment right now on Initiative 4 would be to reiterate to go out and find best practices that it may, and then modify those to fit our district needs. But also on 6.10 in the left-hand column, articulate a complete K-12 ELA program, including current, and then propose additional expenditures of laptops and desktops. I'm okay with movies, but and library books, and we're going to get to the classroom of the future. And I'm concerned about the value of laptops and desktops mm-hmm. in the near future. Mm-hmm. I just want to make sure that we're looking out as far as we can.
Sure.
In terms of technology.
Okay. Point well taken.
Are we going to look as we go through this process, because sort of segueing or following on Mark's comments, the high interest level books, a couple of years ago we had some additional money, at least at Morrilby High, and I'm sure that it happened in a lot of sites where we spent a lot of money in purchasing books for the library and so forth. So I see someone shaking their head over there, but I don't know if that came down to the elementary level or not. But a lot of those materials exist, and I wonder if we're going to look at kind of cataloging them, inventorying them, and seeing what is and what exists, and then work going from there.
Very good.
Okay.
Thank you. Number five is math. And basically, we need to make some increases overall substantially in the math area. This is ambitious. We're starting off a little small, but this is one of our more ambitious goals. And we need to still develop our actual plan because we're really trying to work on doing the right thing with mathematics at beginning at the kindergarten level. It's very important because we are missing the mark, especially as students reach Algebra 1 at the 8th grade level. Our goals will include adding, again, teachers on special assignment, grounded largely at the sites because we believe that's where their focus needs to be. Our schools will likely be devoting much of their extra full-time equivalents in Initiative 1 to this focus, and we anticipate some serious professional development. We are increasing math employment in the district. We're actually currently seeking to fill 3 positions, so that's kind of exciting, getting some new math teachers into the school district at the secondary level. And also, part of this will begin the conversations about the alignment of STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, or perhaps STEAM, science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So as far as the programmatic implications, we're adding 2 teachers on special assignments to increase our efficacy in the math program, professional development, and a slow move from math to STEM. I mean, we really just need to kind of nail down math before we get too involved in everything else, although there's a lot of proponents saying, you know, the best way to teach mathematics is through science. And so we have to look at all those factors. But at this point, our price tag is $780,000, and that is largely in the area of professional development and those teachers on special assignment.
Anyone from the public? Okay, board members. Mrs. Sheffer and then Mr. Buckman.
I would just say I love seeing the professional development in this. I think it's really important, and I would hope that at the secondary level that teachers other than math teachers be, however this works, and I'm sure it will happen, but encourage teachers from other disciplines as well as math learn how to incorporate mathematics into their curriculum to reach students who may walk in the classroom or at the math class already thinking, this is not where I want to be. So can slide it in wherever possible. So I think I love the professional development in this. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I think that first piggyback on Ellen's comments on professional development, and as I go through, or as I went through these and noticed the number of classroom aides and support staff, and really wonder whether the group was thinking in terms of the support staff and the aides attending the same professional development. So it just seems to me that if we're going to put aides in the classroom, they ought to be able to be functioning and focusing on at the same level. So it's not particular in this one.
Yeah, I'm not sure we have a lot of aides going into classrooms as part of the initiatives. Am I missing that?
I thought aides
in some areas.
Just EL.
And
okay.
Paraeducators, but I don't think we even addressed the paraeducator piece in here other than professional development for them.
I think professional development is good for everybody.
It is good for everybody.
On this one, the thought that came to mind, because math was something that my accountant is still doing for me. I'm hoping that we're thinking about pushing outside the box a little bit, some online classes, some online help, 24-hour help, or some interactive stuff on Facebook. Facebook does have some protections now that you can get for a school district. It's Facebook.net. So they can't get to each other's little pages, but they can strong interaction with teachers on a regular basis. And I know that in this one, if I had somebody to go to after school and got help, I could probably do percentages, which I don't do really well. But this may be, and in other places where online stuff starts to become really handy. I'd also like to take the opportunity right now to also mention textbooks and digital textbooks, and I didn't see that, or I missed it in here.
Yeah, and
I'm hoping that's another consideration.
Yeah, in our classroom of the future, I think we have a whole section on e-books and.
Is that what e-books were?
That's what it's referring to.
Sorry, I missed that.
Partially.
Okay, I thought those were the ones I bought from Kindle.
Okay, Bill.
I know it's getting late, so I'll just quickly mention one of the programs I saw in the Central Valley was something called Math on Call, where there was like our channel 20 or 21, 19, there was homework help, and you could actually call in, and people who had cable could sit down and watch and get math help on.
We have a similar
problems.
Thing through our ETC portal, I believe, that has some of that, I believe. Am I wrong on that? I think so.
There's some mathematics.
Yeah.
I'll have to get my password out again. Okay, thanks.
On to six, okay.
Number six, please.
Initiative six has to do with accelerated and specialized learning opportunities. And you'll notice that in some ways we've stepped back and are seeing this year as a research year in this area because, you know, we're going to be largely immersed in some of these other initiatives. And so we kind of have to figure out where to put our priorities. But the research here is significant, and we do have a measurable goal here to increase our AP exam access. And you'll see in our programmatic implications, it's really a research and visitation year for us. We're not necessarily proposing doing a lot besides looking at some magnet school programs, some magnet schools, some dual immersion that goes into the secondary level, some advanced coursework, doing a little investigation into international baccalaureate. So the price tag, we have about $8,000 here, and it's really largely on research, visitation, doing some investigation so that this may be a more robust action plan in the future, but we're trying to kind of see where the human resources should be falling right now.
Okay, anybody from the public? Mr. Buckmoyer.
I'd just like to ask the board.
You know what, can you come on up, because they got to record it.
It's a great goal to have challenging classes for kids. Just ask everybody to stay focused on that there are ways to make a course rigorous and challenging other than to label it as an AP course. And sometimes it seems kind of an easy, you know, we'd like more challenge, so let's put in more AP courses. And I like the idea of more challenge. I think kids, it speaks to your thing. When you're challenged at school, you're engaged in school, you're coming, you're thinking your time is well spent. But there are ways to accomplish that other than just attacking it in an AP frame. Although increasing AP isn't necessarily a negative thing, but just that might not be the first response.
And
so,
thank you. And I think some of the things that we've been reading about is that simply the fact of giving something an AP level doesn't make it a quality course. Yeah. And so I think we need to look at quality and then align quality with whatever else we're going to do. Board members, Mr. Buckman.
I'm going to be buying coffee for everybody in the morning. On Initiative 6, I noticed that we did step back, and I think it's going to be a great year of research. As we explore, and it looks like we've got travel expenses in here, I think this would be a tremendous opportunity. And I noticed that there's teacher hourly and substitute pay, so it looks like the teachers were certainly thought of being involved in this, and I appreciate that. This may be a great opportunity because these are some big bites, IB and magnet schools, the two-way immersion, to also involve community and parents. Mm-hmm. And so I personally think the dollar amount for this item is too small. Thank you.
Okay, and number 7. This is the data section, the data initiative, and this is why we are able to focus our energy. We need to become more comfortable with engaging all of our professionals in the valuing and analysis of formative and summative data of all types. We know that these high-stakes end-of-year exams that students take are not where the story of our district lies. It is in the regular teacher-created, higher-order thinking assessments that are common. And in the surveys and demographic data that tell us how our students feel and what and how they're engaged in school. So our goals here are to create common benchmarks, to become comfortable with self-analysis and report boldly how we are doing to the board, where we're making the mark, where we're not. And school districts who are finding great success with bridging the achievement gap are districts that are hungry for data and study it and are well-versed in it. So what you see here is, as far as implementation plan, the developments of common assessments in various areas and grade levels, an additional teacher on special assignment to work on assessment. And we have one now to bridge that into two. And the movement towards online report cards, online registration, and a price tag of about $130,000. Most of that is ongoing costs, but there's a lot of carryover from other initiatives you see in this one. So it's kind of blended in there with some of the other initiatives.
Anybody from the public? Okay. And before we get to Mr. Angel and Mr. Quisenberry, I just want to say I think it's important not only to inform our parents, students, and teachers, but I think it's really important to inform our community about how our schools are
Absolutely.
Doing and how that we need more transparency. If we're being asked to spend $6 million, I wish it was $600 million, if we're being asked to spend $6 million on something, then I think we have an obligation to the community to demonstrate to them that what we're doing is working. Mr. Angel and Mr. Quisenberry.
A couple pieces here. I'm really excited to see the common assessments being worked on, and I like the fact that you have a TOSA here. I agree a little bit with Bruce on the TOSA mm-hmm. thing. You know, I hate to see people out of the classroom for a long period of time. But I have seen I've been one of those teachers that have worked really hard on common assessments and then had to go in and teach the next day and then go back and work really hard on common assessments. So I think taking that out of the teacher's hands, but putting teachers on a committee to review and come up with common standards is really good, really great. The other thing is, on the surveys, they indicated that we're going to test our kids to death. Something to that effect mm-hmm. was in there. And I disagree. I think with our common assessments, it's not going to be more testing. It's going to be targeted testing. And I say targeted because I don't want to wait till August to find out how my kids are doing on the standardized tests, which we are graded on fairly or not. I want to know in October. Then I want to know again in January. You know, I want to know throughout the year. So for me, this is a non-negotiable, and I really like the work you guys are putting into it.
You know, I just a little quick comment. Last night I was at Cal Poly doing mock interviews with prospective teachers, just giving them pointers on how to interview people who are finishing their student teacher programs. Ryan Pinkerton was there also, and what I was struck with was I asked questions about assessments as kind of an interview question, because it is a question you would ask in an interview, and what I was really impressed with was new teachers coming into the field talking about assessment as a regular way of formatively finding out how they are doing as teachers, how every single one of their students are doing, and developing ways that are simple, true, that have fidelity, and that are informing instruction. And so, yeah, the end of the year stuff, that's great to celebrate, but we need to have assessment and formative assessment be such an ongoing part of what we do as teachers, as educators, that we know how our students are doing at all times. And how to make that seamless and not interfere with instruction, we understand the dilemma, so this needs to be heavily focused on teacher input, I think, to make it successful. We've seen places where it hasn't been successful within our own district, and we've seen places where it has been successful, and so we need to be cognizant of that.
And I know you guys and our teachers, our expert staff, will write tests that by the end of the year, we're going to say, you know what, this many kids are going to be advanced. Unless Phil has a cold that day, he's probably going to be advanced or proficient. That would be my expectation as a board member and as a parent. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
My question is, again, about the teacher on special assignment, is how do you visualize this person, this additional person, working with the staffs at the various schools?
Give it to one of our experts here.
One way would be to, Darla's already begun some of this work, showing our staff at our sites how they can use Data Director and the scanners to create their own assessments. But part of it is also working with teachers to look at the data they do have and how to analyze it and how to make adjustments in instruction or in programs. So that's another big part of it. If we're developing common assessments, we need the TOSIS to do some of the legwork. We want the input from the sites, but it's very time-consuming. And so our math TOSIS, our ELA TOSIS, could concentrate on content and drafting and looking at all of our documents, like our state documents, frameworks, Common Core standards, to make sure we're incorporating that. Getting input from our sites, but our assessment person can help do that part of actually inputting them. And it would be very difficult, I think, for Darla to try to do that much work for both K-6 and 7-12.
Thank you.
Bruce? And you know, I'm just going to ask you, Bruce, I don't want this to be a debate. I'm sorry. I'm just getting kind of late.
I didn't think
I
was making it a debate. I thought I was just making comments.
No, you are, and I'm okay. Sorry. I hope I didn't offend you about that.
But I think it's important that you listen to different viewpoints, especially teacher viewpoints. So that's what I'm bringing here.
Absolutely, and I think I've been really open to allowing comments, and I really appreciate what you say.
I appreciate that, Chris. As on this topic here, I just want to remind the board that as we're asking teachers to go ahead and input this data into computers and to do this again, it's more teacher time that they have to go ahead and do these things. You know, testing and assessment is essential in education, so you know where you've come from and where you're going and what the results are. But I just want to remind the board that testing is not a learning mode. When you start testing students, they are not learning. You're just getting data from them to find out what they know. So the more testing you do, the less learning that's going on in that classroom. Those students are being tested, and they're regurgitating what they know, but they're not learning new things. So I hope that the board in its wisdom doesn't go overboard on the testing. Thank you.
Okay, anybody else on number 7? Okay, let's move on to number 8.
Number 8 is our Classroom of the Future. This is a one that obviously will be taking on a multi-year approach, and so this is really about getting some of the stuff we need phased in. We will need to explore future options, and this largely is about getting our infrastructure in place and then very importantly developing our staff. So if you look at the actual programmatic implications, we see laptops, we see interactive tools like the Mobies and the clickers you saw at a recent board meeting, projectors, document cameras. The wireless infrastructure, we believe, is really important to put in place. Professional development, the reinstating of our educational technology, teacher on special assignment, investigating e-books, which really gets to the e-textbook area, and really looking at some model programs and some funding sources, because this stuff gets expensive fast, and we have a $1.6 million price tag on just the first phase of this. But again, from what I was even seeing yesterday with some new teachers and the way they are using technology in instruction, it's exciting students, and it's and we need to be innovative and get more innovative.
Okay. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? And I'd ask you to come now and talk to us now. Going once, going twice? Amelia, did you have something you wanted to say about this?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond and mention that we had received a lot of input on this initiative, not just this one, all the initiatives from teachers that are on committees, such as the District Technology Committee, the District Forum. So teachers have had the input the teachers gave through those venues, as well as the parent surveys that we did, community surveys, business leaders. So we have had input, and collectively the four directors took all of that input and then we put it into this format. So I wanted to address a concern that had been mentioned previously. Also, we are looking at tablets. I know Mark asked about other technologies. The tablets are kind of in their infancy in the market, so we are looking at tablets for future. This is just our first year, so we're looking at wireless infrastructure for our schools. We're going to need to phase that in because it's expensive. And so we're looking at future wireless tablets and trying to phase out software so we can do more with online web-based resources so that the kids can get to them from home, 24/7 access.
Before I go back to the board, is there anybody else that would like to address this item? Okay. Go ahead, Mark.
So, Amelia, thank you for reminding me, which I was trying to remind myself, where this is now the bite-sized pieces, the Halloween candy as opposed to the big candy bar. And so I try to stay within that framework. One of the first things that came to mind as I was looking at the Create the Classroom of the Future is I know IBM has a, what they call a campus somewhere, and they invite schools to come in and go through it. Mac, I think, is trying to copy that, and I think HP may have one as well. So I'm hoping at some point we're looking maybe the year after this or somewhere down the 5 years, that we're looking at participating in those kinds of programs, so we're really up on what's going on.
And in that area, I would like to say we do have, you know, as one of the programmatic implications to you know, go visit model programs, and I can't say enough. I mean, it's been many years since I've been there, but the annual Q conference that we do send staff members to, that's the place. That's where you're going to find the new stuff and the new technologies and practice sessions and the ability to use things. And so we've been active in that. I know Amelia's been very active in getting teachers and getting staff to the Q conference, and it's fantastic.
And I hope we continue that, and I actually hope that we can as a group talk about putting more money in here for travel, because right now we've got about $500. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just way too big a topic to do that. So appreciate that. Thank you.
Initiative number 9.
Okay, at number 9, as Dr. Prater said in his preface there, we need to develop healthier solutions to what has been 4 years of impasse at the bargaining table with our teachers' association. We also, in this initiative, want to begin the discussion of career pathways for classified and certificated groups. We want to stay comparable or ahead of the curve in terms of compensation. So this initiative is really getting to our professional groups at San Luis Coastal. You'll see that as far as programmatic implications, we want to develop career pathways for teachers. You already see we have all these TOSAs we want to add, which is an excellent career pathway for teachers, but we need to become creative. You know, the district south of us, Lucia Marr, has done some very creative things through their collective bargaining agreement with pathways for teachers, for mentor teachers, and we need to be open to looking at those things and would like to work with our association on those things. We have requested to add an administrative designee for two of our schools where we have our largest special education populations. This would be a teacher that would be either in or working on an administrative credential. So again, kind of working on that career pathway as a half-time position at both C.L. Smith and Baywood Elementary. And we're looking for collective bargaining health. Our price tag for this is $112,000, and that is primarily for those administrative designees.
Thank you. Is there anybody from the public that would like to speak to this item? Okay, seeing nobody. Is board comments? Mr. Buckman, followed by Mr. Angel.
Thank you. I'm very excited about this because I think within our teaching staff here, as outlined, there's just tremendous possibility and leadership, whether they become administrators or stay at the site. My hope is that in future years we'll be looking at building career pathways for classified as well.
Yes.
So as we start empowering the clerical staff at the elementary sites and at the sites to free the principals, they're going to be learning tremendous skills. Mm-hmm. And
okay. Number 10.
This is the access to college and career pathways. We need to make a move toward more A through G CSU UC fulfillment. We know that not every student is going to college, but every student needs to graduate career and or college ready. One aspect is having access to the A through G requirements, and that's one of our measurements here. Successful school districts are providing much more opportunities, especially among some of the ethnic subgroups and EL students. We have goals relative to AVID and making AVID completely a part of all of our secondary schools, and we will begin to take a concerted focus on career technical education pathways, which we anticipate tying into academy or magnet programs, which kind of fall back on Initiative 6, which is kind of a research year. So as far as the program implications, it is to track post-high school success, see how our students are doing when they leave us, increase the A through G through additional opportunities, working with the regents of the UC-CSUs, addressing areas where the difference is made. One of those gatekeepers seems to be Algebra 2, again, going back to the math initiatives. And fully implement AVID and articulate CTE. The price tag is $34,000.
Come on, Mark. But before you go,
I can go.
No, I do want to invite. I do want to invite anybody from the public to please, if you have comments about this, please come forward. Seeing none, Mr. Buckman.
Yes, thank you. As I looked at this, I was very excited about the AVID program. Very excited about that. As I sit on the ROP board, there's more and more talk about outreach to parents to understand that ROP offers A to G classes, mm-hmm. And that there's really some fine models in the state, one in particular being San Mateo, mm-hmm. for implementing that. And so I'd like to suggest somehow, and I have no idea how we're going to find the money, to put in this budget and in among these district actions, outreach to parents and students so that they understand that it's all not sitting in a classroom, but there's some hands-on ways to mm-hmm. to go beyond and actually find careers. Mm-hmm. And so some kind of outreach to the community or to the middle school at least.
We happen to have a good connection with the head guy of the ROP
in
San Mateo.
Yeah, he's an interesting...
Former employee.
Okay. I'm sorry, Jim.
Okay, first I want to commend the staff on all their hard work on this. This is an impressive document. But I do have a question or at least a comment on this particular goal as far as it relates to the college and career centers at the high schools. Mm-hmm. It's been my observation that these have not always been a very comfortable or welcoming situation for EL students, and maybe I can't generalize to other Hispanic or Latino students, but it's something that I think needs to be kind of looked at and addressed.
I just want to thank the staff. This was incredibly thought-provoking material, and we probably wouldn't be here this late if it wasn't. And I want to thank you for using your vast knowledge for making me think.
It's a great team over there.
Great, and just a great document. Thank you very much.
So when you add, just one quick conclusion, when you add this together, we get nearly $6.2 million. And some of these are one-time costs and will come from ARA and jobs bill money that we have not spent. Some comes from developer fees, as you know, for the preschool infrastructure. Which is not the general fund, and we will have budgetary recommendations that will include some cost savings to pay for some of this. But truly, this is largely taken out of our unallocated reserves, and it is an investment into teaching and learning and into students who are all, by all accounts, slipping and slipping in school support. And so it is an investment into the future of our school district. So it's what we believe at this point will begin to move us from good to great, and look forward to continuing to work on it. And at the next iteration, it'll largely be tied with a budget recommendation we'll be asking you to adopt. So thanks for the opportunity. I'm sorry it took so long. I was trying to get through them quickly.
One question I do have, and you can probably send it on the Friday update. I expect some feedback on the $6 million from some of our constituencies. Mm-hmm. Can I get an amount, how much of it comes from developer fees?
Sure. I'm sure we
can
do
that. I have
an
idea of what's one time, but
yeah.
I want to see.
No, I'm sure we can do that. That'll be part of the budget recommendations.
I know
I'm sure we can
here.
Do that. Yeah.
Erica. Oh, Ellen, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I would just ask that when we do the budget piece that we have sort of the net cost, as Phil was pointing out, and I would also like to know on the budget breakdown, what is one-time spending and what is ongoing? If we could just have some ideas about that. Thanks.
I'm sure we can do that.
So, Eric, it seems like you've got you and the staff have their plates full. I know we'll be hearing again about this in about 2 weeks. I think some of the things that I heard, and I just want to reflect that overall, I think the board is pleased with these initiatives and lauds the staff on the amount of work that they did. We recognize as a board that we have a trust that we have for the students in this community to have them achieve. Some of the comments I heard were that there were concerns about some of the TOSA issues and how we're approaching TOSAs. From Mr. Bedrigian, concerns about testing. And I think that's reflected in some of the comments we got. That said, though, I think that it's important to, I would concur with Mr. Angel, that the common assessments are important. They're important for the students, and I think they're important for the staff as well to help formulate their teaching. Some concerns from Mr. Quisenberry about how we're approaching some of the EL things. I think that's important to discuss as well. There'll be some adjustments made to it. And then when we're asked to approve the budget, then what I think the board would like to see, and certainly what I would like to see, is some explanation or reference in the budget to how these things go together, so that somebody, a school board member or somebody from the public, can be able to actually look at the budget and say, okay, we want to spend $500,000 on this. This is where that might fall on budget line X. I think something like that might be helpful so that we can actually reference this to the budget itself. I don't think many people will want to see that, but it would be nice just, in terms of transparency, I think. I think the final thing that I'd like to close with is I'm assuming we are putting this on the website. This has gone out to the principals, and that I guess they need staff, community members, students need a place to address any concerns. I don't know if they would send that to you or if they would send it to Rick or Rita. Who would you like that input sent to?
Well, what I'll do is I'll process this.
Right.
It's a lot of information.
Stew through it.
We're getting compressed into this sandwich. And
right. Yeah, I know that.
I plan on posting it on the web and encouraging, and I will put a narrative of the speech that I presented
right.
with alongside that, so it has a context. And I will encourage feedback. And so how I do that, I'll work with Amelia to see how we can do that so it's purposeful right. and easy for teachers and employees, all employees. Right. And I will do that. I think, you know, this has been a pretty rigorous process, mm-hmm. and we have a lot of factors involved because we really need to communicate these things. Really, the SMART goals really, in my view, are a byproduct mm-hmm. of the initiatives that were adopted, right. for which we received tons of feedback yeah. on. When you look at the annualized SMART goals, you'll see that they're very mm-hmm. doable right. in large measure because they've broken them down over that 5-year time frame. So when you look at them, they're deliberately designed so that they are reachable. They're within the context of the single school plans for student achievement at all of our sites. The challenge, of course, is putting all these pieces together and putting together planning teams for the summer.
Right.
So that you have site autonomy in how that looks at each site. I'm very much uninterested in micromanaging that process. So the principals and their staffs need to be able to have the green light to go forward to do those things. And so we're running out of time in the year to do it.
Right. Absolutely. And I think that the discussions we've had over the past 3 or 4 months over this have given a lot of time and opportunities for input. I think now that we've put some flesh on the bone, we're seeing the school site plans for next year. I think what I'm going to be expecting to see is some coherence in the school site relating to the SMART goals that we're seeing here and giving us a way to judge what each school is doing. So I think enough said, and it's probably time for us to move on to the action consent agenda. Thank you for indulging
Thank you.
Me.
So if we can, is it okay with the board if we move on to the action consent agenda? Okay, please let me know if you'd like me to pull an item. Item number 7, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 8, approval to teach a class outside of credential authorization. Number 9, acceptance of donations. 10, disposition of surplus property. 11, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 12, approval of purchase orders. 13, approval of adult school classes for 2011-2012. 14, reappointment to the San Luis Obispo SELPA Community Advisory Committee. 14, pull. 15, approval of additional international student exchange program for 2011-2012. And 16, approval of out-of-state field trips for the Ford AAA troubleshooting contest and the National Skills USA competition. Okay. Is there a motion?
Yeah, I'll move approval of items 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 15, and 16.
Okay. I'll second the motion.
Been moved by Mrs. Rogers, seconded by Mr. Quesenberry. Is there any discussion, any comments from the public on this? Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Mr. Buckman, item 14, please.
Yes, item 14. I'd really like to take this opportunity to congratulate Michelle Ronzon on her reappointment, and I also would like to congratulate her because she's president of the Baywood PTA, so she's really busy. Thank you. So I'd like to move approval of item 14.
It's been moved by Mr. Buckman and seconded by Mr. Angel. Is there any other discussion on that one? Okay. Seeing none, all in favor? Aye. Opposed? Carries 6-0. Let's move on down to item number 18, advanced agenda. Is there anybody that would like to put anything on the advanced agenda?
Hi. Chris, I don't know if this is an advanced agenda item, but as we keep talking about putting portables on the sites, it dawned on me that some of the sites have different amounts of grass and blacktop, and I don't know if we can get on the Friday memo probably, but get some kind of indication of the percent of coverage by buildings. And I don't know if that's something that's going to be easy to pull together or whether it'll take some time, but the footprint of the buildings and the acreage of the grass, and I don't know if we need to go into blacktop or not.
Are you concerned, Mark, that that's being shrunk or something?
My concern is as we continue to have a need, or we continue to add portables, that it's something I'd like to have in the back of my mind, and so it's a matter of how much infringement we.
Okay. Jeff, do you want to address that?
It's our goal not to infringe on play space.
Missing anybody? Reports by board members. Phil?
Just real quick, I know it's late, but some things you just have to report out. Slow High Tiger Awards, really great ceremony. I got to attend that. And who else? Dr. Prater and Mr. Quesenberry, Ms. Sheffer, Mr. Buckman. So a lot of us were there, giving out tons of awards. I also had the opportunity to attend the County Writers Award Workshop, and I know I'd like to thank some of our teachers who were graders on or judges on the essays, and those would be Mr. Banfield from I think Baywood, and Mr. Bedrigan from Morro Bay High for helping grade and taking their own time. And it was a great ceremony put on by the county. We had several San Luis Coastal students represented, and here's a personal plug, including my second grader, Amanda. So I had to put that in there. Bishop's Peak Open House was a phenomenal event as well. Lots of community, a lot of kids playing, running, getting out there and working on that wellness. I didn't see – oh, no. There were no desserts that I saw. And kudos to I don't know the fourth grade teacher at Bishop's Peak, but the quality of assignments I saw on that teacher's wall just showed there's so much teaching going on in that classroom, as well as our teacher of the year, Ms. Rosenfield. Kids adults were giving her hugs and saying, I remember when you were my teacher. So just great stuff there. And, of course, the Teach Dinner was another great event, a lot of fun. And I'm understanding for you teachers there will be some more grant money available next year because it was such a successful event. Other than that...
Bring them out.
I'm sorry.
Bring them out.
Bring them out. First graders at Pacheco have to send somebody along and then write about them. And so my first grader, Katie, has a – she just loves the whole board meeting thing. She loves to watch it on TV. And so she wanted to say that Clifford attended the board meeting and she was going to write about it. And she put a dress on him so he looked really good. And I didn't want to do that, but that's all right.
That's so cute.
I'll make this even briefer. Phil was so entertaining. He already mentioned our attendance at the Golden Tiger and the Teach Banquet. I wanted to mention that I had an opportunity to attend an Interact luncheon at Morro Bay High School, and the four Morro Bay students who had attended their leadership conference, and it was wonderful to see them report on how positive they felt about themselves and how much the leadership conference motivated them to be better leaders and more confident leaders. So that's it for me. Thank you.
And I would just say, on behalf of all the people that the classified dinner last night, it was a great event. Reminder for folks, tomorrow night is the Morro Bay Band Concert, and then a bunch of open houses on Thursday night as well, and tomorrow night. So that said, meeting is adjourned.